to start as a prayer, and we want to apologize for starting a bit out of time. Members, you are here to receive a briefing from three provinces, Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, and Western Cape. My name is Musa Chabane, the acting chairperson of the portfolio committee. I serve in the committee. Our chairperson will be resuming his duty in a few weeks' time. I'll request we also welcome the minister. I think minister, we've received briefing from other provinces. You are lucky you have been accompanied by the head of the department, the Coast Guard head, Eastern Cape and Northern Cape and Western Cape. We request, Minister, your team to run introductions so that we know who's here. And after that, we request members of the honorable members to introduce themselves. Thank you. Minister.
Yes, Aaron Mutwalazi, Minister of Home Affairs.
Good morning, Chair members. I'm Tulani Mavuso, I'm the Acting Director General.
Good morning, Chair. Ricardo Abrams, Acting Provincial Manager, Northern Cape.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members and the Minister. My name is Norman Ngangara Mashia, Acting Deputy Director General, Civil Services.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, honorable members. I'm Yusuf Simons, the Provincial Manager of for the Western Cape.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members and colleagues. My name is Dunle Mabulu, the Provincial Manager in the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Tenbuti Nunu, District Manager Operations, Sarah Batman, and I'm also Acting Director of Finance in the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Minister, colleagues and Honourable Members. I'm Almeen van der Berg, I'm the Provincial Coordinator for Western Cape.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Members. I'm Wangaka, the District Manager for Garden Route and Central Western Cape.
Good day, Honourable Chair and Members. I'm Rory Santo, the Director of Finance in Western Cape.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Minister. My name is Irmgard Michaels. I'm the District Manager for Cape Winelands and West Coast in the Western Cape.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Minister and Honourable Members. My name is Bongiwe Sakauli. I'm the District Manager Operations for Cape Metro and Overberg in the Western Cape.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members and Minister. I'm Francisca Smith, Provincial Coordinator, Northern Cape.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Members of the Committee, Minister. I'm Richard Stoltz. I'm the Chief Director of Immigration Support.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, my name is Mozi Njoko. I'm representing the department in the IGR unit.
Good morning, Chair. Frank Magua, Parliamentary Officer, Office of the Minister.
Thank you. I'll request the Honourable Members to introduce themselves. Honourable Kut.
I was saying that my name is Musiwe Lugod. I'm a member of the committee.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Adrian Ruiz. I'm a member of the committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everyone, and to the minister. I am Angel Kanile. I'm a member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Minister, colleagues, the Department on Legal for the Marwa. I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning, my name is Cheryl Marke, a member of this committee.
Good morning, colleagues, and sorry for being late. My name is Kidi Malolo-Kwase, a member of this committee.
My name is Sasnat Molekwa, member of the Kotlo Group.
I'm still Kobutile Richard Janji, member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Itima Tonsi, I'm the committee secretary.
Good morning, Adam Salmon, content advisor to the committee.
Good morning, Nandi Zomakakwana, committee assistant.
Thank you, colleagues, honourable members. Can I recognise apologies if the committee secretary?
I have got only one apology from Honourable Joe McClough.
Honourable Minister?
Yeah, thank you.
One apologies if you have
done.
Okay. Thank you, colleagues. We're going to we're going to request the provinces as per the program to brief the committee. We'll allow the three provinces to brief the committee. Thereafter, we'll interface with the report. We'll run like that so that we're able to manage time and discussions from members of the honourable members. I will not waste time. I will venture straight to invite, unless the minister you have an indication before we start. Okay. I will invite Eastern Cape to Minister.
We were under the impression, Honourable Chair, that you're starting with Northern Cape. They are the ones who are ready.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Thank you. Yeah. Northern Cape?
Thank you, Chairperson, Minister, Honourable Members. Thank you for the opportunity to present the province and its functions this morning. My name is Ricardo Abrams. I'm the Acting Provincial Manager of the province. Chairperson, I want to highlight maybe there might be certain discrepancies in terms of the format, in terms of slides, where certain slides might have changed in terms of numbering, but in terms of actual narrative or data, there's not been a change in any of the data or the narrative information within the presentation. And thank you once again for the opportunity.
So does that mean there's no new document? We are referring to the one that
the
you sent earlier?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm raising that board.
In terms of contents, Chairperson, our contents refer to the overview, the demographics and footprint of the province, the civic services division of the province. We also have an overview on what is immigration services and immigration in the province. We also have in our pack the financial and supply chain management information, counter-corruption and security, and also certain achievements and challenges that we do experience within the province. Starting off in terms of just the overview of the civic services environment and in what area and environment we operate, the Northern Cape, as generally known, is the biggest province in terms of land mass within the country, but it serves the smallest population within the country. In terms of stats, South Africa, at the last census period, the province consists of about 1.16 million inhabitants, South Africans. And our footprint within the province consists of different areas where the population finds themselves. In terms of unemployment, in terms of the last, within the reporting period, quarter four, our unemployment slightly decreased by 2%, but it was around about the 25% mark. The province constantly remain an area of distance. Our demographics place our population extremely far from most of our service points, and that in itself is something in terms of our operations is highly informed in how we deal with the South African public within the province. Our captive audience environment within the province in terms of how we want to remain efficient is to document our learners especially our learners that enters our last years of senior certificate education. We concentrate also highly on the war on poverty environment, and also have close ties with social programs in order to support the issuance of documentation to previously disadvantaged and also communities in greater need of the departmental services. In terms of demographics, Chairperson and members, the province has 5 district municipalities. As depicted on the slide, you have Francis Baard, you have Pixley Kaseme, you have John Taulo Gaitsiwe, ZF Ngao, and the Namakwa region. This slide is important for going forward in terms of providing an overview of how we operate, in terms of what is land mass, which offices are modernized, and also where is the majority of our on-health facilities. Within the Francis Baard municipality, we have most of our offices operating within the 5 local municipalities, modernized within that environment. So these are offices where you can receive a smart ID card within your local municipal environment. We also have online health facilities in most of our local municipalities within the Francis Baard environment, which provides us a fairly good footprint within this municipality. Within the Pixley Kaseme environment, the geographical environment becomes a testing factor because it is extremely spread and our population is far apart. Within the different municipalities, all 8 of them, we have only 3 operating live, or 5 operating live capture offices. This puts some of the local municipalities at this point in time not fitted with a home affairs office and also not a live capture office. Those offices are primarily reached by mobile services. We also have 7 hospitals that is connected. That means we have services where our infrastructure is permanently located within these health facilities, where birth occurs within these populations. John Taulo Gaitsiwe, this is the Kuruman area. We currently have 1 modernized office within that environment and 4 health facilities that has our equipment on site for registration. The next district municipality would be ZF Ngao. In this environment, we have 2 modernized offices that is operating and 6 health facilities that has our infrastructure available. The last district is the Namakwa district, furthest one west of us. And Chairperson, we usually joke if we're in the province, we say within the Northern Cape, the furthest service point west in South Africa is usually our Home Affairs office. After that, you're in the ocean. So the furthest point west in South Africa, we have a hospital facility in Port Olive that we serve. In that environment, we have 2 modernized offices and 5 health facilities that we operate. Again, if we get to the physical layout of the province, Chairperson, you will see how vast it is in terms of the footprint in the middle. This is the next slide is just, and slide 7 is just a synopsis of what I've just indicated. This is what one wants to highlight to Chairperson. You would see a major blank spot roundabout where Northern Cape is printed. That area does have communities, and we say that within those areas, there is a need for services for our members and our people. Our mobile services is primarily within this environment. In terms of our structure, we operate with 1 provincial manager structure, which is currently vacant. We have a director finance position that is also currently vacant. We have 5 district positions, of which only 2 is filled, one of which is myself and my fellow colleague, Mem Daniso, who is the 2 district managers. The other district manager positions remains vacant. And then we have the different health facilities as highlighted within the operating facilities that is highlighted in the previous slides. In terms of our targets, the province remains active And in areas of importance, we do place a lot of emphasis on achieving targets such as the birth target and have very active programs in reaching the birth target in relation to the actual births within the province. We are proud to say we have reached the set target as developed by the department within the province.
Sorry to interrupt. I can see members are confused on the page, on the slide. Yeah. Can you, I think the document you have there is not the same as, it's the same, but I think the packaging is, can I get indication if you're comfortable, member, so that we think?
Because he indicated that they are, so we were forced to kind of page within the document. So maybe he's going to have to help us with that because the following is not the same as what we got.
Chairperson, yes, I think there was an apology, but it does not distract from the fact that it's confusing. It is confusing everybody. I'm also confused, I must confess. So I'll ask the speaker to please guide the house which page is reading, because he's the only one who understands how he mixed up the pages, not us.
Can I get indication from members if you're comfortable with the... Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister. As a guidance, would it be advisable, Chairperson, that I announce the heading of the slide every time that we go to a slide so that we can just follow? Thank you very much.
You must know that it's working against your time. It's confusing.
Thank you, Chair, for the heads up. Achievement on provincial targets, that is the current one. It's slide 10. It might be 8 or 9 on your slides, Chairperson and members. In terms of birth registration, we have achieved over the reporting period above the required threshold in terms of our birth rate. We also have to highlight that in terms of actual birth occurrences reported by health, we have reached in the late 90% of the actual birth occurrences within the province. The next one is the smart identity card.
Proceed.
The smart identity card environment, for which the province was supposed to deliver 141,000 as per target, but over the reporting period we were only possible to issue 101,000 of the identity cards. In terms of our immigration corps, that is the inspectorate division, most of the targets under inspectorate has been achieved. In terms of the detection, we have about 72, which is 100%. And then in terms of transgressors, in terms of contravention of the Immigration Act, we have about 1,300 that we have dealt with over the reporting period. Deportations over the period is 53. And that is direct deportations. That means it's deportations directly to countries of normal origin. Transfers from the province to the deportation facility in Gauteng, Lindala, was over 900 for the reporting period. And then fraudulent marriages investigated over the period was 2. It's one of the areas we did not achieve 100%. As I said, it is only on the basis of reporting. In terms of settlement of invoices, which is also a target within the province, we have achieved virtually 100%, it's 99.94% of all receipts and invoices paid to service providers within this period. The next slide, Chairperson, is birth registration within 30 days. It's once again a synopsis of the statistics and the different areas of gathering of statistics. This is the same information that we've provided, it's just at a different level in terms of where the kilometers is that we should travel. And for the pleasure of the House, one wants to indicate in terms of the footprint we need to cover to get services to members. One of the furthest points that we do service is a place called Griekwastad. In single trip in terms of our roaming services, the department has to travel 205 kilometers to physically get to the facility in order to register a birth. So that means we need to travel to that hospital with members, get the services and return. That cannot be done daily. So there is a process in which we do gather data of mothers after delivery of birth so that we can do we go around the local communities to find these members. So in order to ensure that we don't lose births as much, so we do house visits in these very far flung areas within the Northern Cape. Again, the latter slides just refer to the statistics also in terms of office registrations of birth, because certain births is also registered within office, not only at health facilities. We do have a drive where we would want to have all births registered at hospitals because it's convenient within the hospital environment. But in certain cases where we do not have the benefit of the hospital, we do have a process of through CDWs and other structures, and also SASSA, to have newly born children brought to our offices for registration within the different local municipalities. And in that environment, we have achieved quite a lot. Our birth trajectory has, over the past 3 years, constantly increased, and this I'm referring to the graph, where we, year on year, is improving the ability for us to register. We're not 100% yet, but we do have an upward trajectory in terms of the birth registration within the province, and that is a good thing for the province. I think, Chairperson and members, the following slide is of critical importance. It's slide number 12, and it says analysis on birth registration. It speaks to cost to product. That is how we calculate what it actually costs to service our South African population in this environment. You would see in a district like Francis Bart, where I've indicated most of our offices modernized and a number of our local health facilities also having infrastructure, the cost to the actual birth registration is around about 12 rand to issue a birth certificate. But in a district like ZF Ndau and Namakwa, to physically go to a hospital and issue a birth certificate on a specific day, it may cost the state 474 rand just to issue one birth certificate. That means it's using infrastructure to go out to rural communities, service the public and return. So that is, it's quite important for us in terms of management to calculate those kind of services in relation to our footprint that we need to serve. We're now moving on to the smart ID card environment. Slide 16, smart ID cards, office and application volumes. The volumes in front provides for the reporting period both the increase and in the latter year the decrease in terms of our volumes. We also have to indicate that we are under pressure because majority of our offices, due to the footprint, as I alluded to, does not give us the benefit to get to those offices. Offices that does concern us is offices in the R, the Pixley area, and also offices in the Namakwaland area. Over the reporting period, we have issued 101,000 smart identity cards, which was an underachievement for the performance year. The graphic, this depiction gives an indication of the reduction within the last financial year on that specific item. Production loss. The next slide speaks to possible production loss due to system downtime, electricity and other and public unrest. These are areas where it is not by virtue of either distance or other factors that is technical that impact on the service delivery of the province. In that environment, for the year that's under review, we've lost over 11,000 applications. That is only in terms of calculating the amount of man hours lost due to environmental elements that resulted in us not achieving the target. Unclaimed documentation within our offices. The province has the benefit of a very low green ID book in hand count. We currently only have 119 green ID books that is in hand. However, on the smart ID card environment, we have over 15,000 smart ID cards that's currently in hand that has not been collected by the public. We do, in the same vein that we do our outreaches, make it a priority to reach our community to come back to the offices where they have applied for these documents so they can receive it. In terms of late registration of birth, for the reporting period, we started out with a residual amount of 165 applications. Over the reporting period, we've collected 1,079 additional applications, and we finalized by the end of the reporting year 912 applications. We then started this current financial year with 209 applications that are still outstanding, and one should indicate the technicality within the LRB environment, late registration of birth, especially in the category 15 years and above, which requires us to do extensive background checks to ensure that we do not contaminate the population register with people that is not from South Africa. So the LRB process is one that is receiving attention, and sometimes the 209 that was spilled over from the previous year is just due to the background check and requirements that has not been fulfilled within that period. Unabridged marriage, unabridged birth certificates is also something that is concerning. We opened with 1,300. We received 2,005, and the number finalized was 1,762. We have about 1,061 outstanding, and our closing balance was 1,382 for the year under review. The same applies to rectifications and duplications. These are other services. And Chairperson, one is to highlight the importance of these specific functions. These are the functions that calls on us to activate and go back and search for very old records to verify the person's particulars. So these functions, by virtue of the time span, is not a flick of the wrist or press of enter. It is really going into archives to go and receive very old documents to rectify details of South Africans that might have been incorrectly placed in modern day periods. In terms of our stakeholder engagements, post our recent elections, we are still trying to reestablish, but for the reporting period, we had very active engagement with very strategic stakeholder engagement, especially at local forums. Local forums provide us the benefit to have greater access through municipalities to local communities and a more active citizenry in that regard. So we have active stakeholder engagements throughout the province, both at local and district, and we also have a provincial stakeholder forum. Chairperson, we're moving over to the Immigration Division of the Northern Cape Province now. Provincial overview on immigration services. The province consists of 11 ports of entry, of which 2 is commercial and the other 6 non-commercial. We have 1 international airport, which is based in Upington, and we have 2 transfrontier parks within the province that borders Namibia, South Africa, and in one area, the Phalagadi would be Namibia, South Africa, and Botswana. Our footprint stretches for immigration, because immigration is not necessarily district or local municipality bound, covers the whole 3,700 square kilometer area, and we also have a borderline environment of over 4,000 kilometers that, from an inspectorate point of view, in support of other law enforcement agencies and the border environment that we deal with. The economic environment in the province is also fast growing, and there are specific hubs that needs to be highlighted. The tourism environment, agricultural environment, the mining environment, and also the solar and renewable energy environment. The astronomy environment has also seen a number of stakeholders or countries, becoming feeding countries to these industries for purposes of skills and other needs. What we also see within the iron ore and manganese belt is also outsourcing of services, especially to those contractors employing SADC nationals within the environment. Management of unregulated businesses within the province is currently becoming a challenge, and it essentially is growing within the areas that we have our analysis. Those communities that has the highest threshold of social support, that means populations that receive grants, usually has a tendency of drawing these kind of industries. Population mostly found within this environment are Bengalis, Pakistanis, Ethiopians, Egyptians, Eritreans, Nigerians, and Somalians. So these are the primary owners of businesses within this environment. We also find certain areas that has illicit trading in substances and trafficking, which do receive our attention in terms of prosecution. In terms of the number of inspectorate officials within the province, this is the footprint that we have. Looking at the demographics in terms of over 300,000 square kilometers and 4,000 kilometers of borderline, it is a very, in our view, a very small unit to cover the population group. Employers charged. As a province, we are proud of the fact that we have a close working relationship with justice, and we enjoy the charging of employers where we do find that illegal migrants have been employed illegally within certain sectors. Within the period under review, 72 of those charges has been concluded. One should also highlight that there's also been fines awarded for this in the province, ranging between 300 and 2,000 rand per incident. Transgressors charged, this includes those undocumented foreigners found within the province, was 1,345 for the different inspectorate units within the province. It just continues on this one with the statistical breakdown of where the different charges is. Deportations and transfers, we have 53 direct deportations from the province to countries of normal origin, and then also 974 transfers to Lindela. Ports of entry information, these are the statistics. As I said, we have two of our provinces are on the top, within the top 20 provinces on the ports of entry side in terms of statistics. The province over the period under review facilitated over 700,000 travelers in and out of the country over a given period. Chairperson, can we move on to the Human Resources Management Division? Our capacity at current for the year under review is 253 positions. That is current. We do have certain capacities lost since February, currently 13, and as highlighted previously, the provincial manager and the director of finance and certain critical senior manager positions within the districts, and also at levels 8 to 12. These are supervisory and middle management positions that is equally important in terms of managing the services as spread through the province. One should highlight, chairperson, if you do not have an adequate person sitting 400 kilometers away from you, it becomes difficult to manage the province. The provincial equity, it gives a fair indication if in terms of percentage-wise. Our lowest percentage is on the Indian population group, where we only have 0.2% in terms of both male and female, or virtually no presentation in that environment. In terms of our percentage representation, male African female is at 38.3, African male is at 26.7, colored. It's 20.5 for female, 10.2 for male. We have zeros in the Indian division. And in the population group white, we have 4.3 under female. Performance management over the years, we have 100% finality of our performance management processes over the period under review. In terms of people management, in terms of pillar and other issues relating to leave, it should be stressed that there is certain areas that the pillar environment where people persistent in terms of ill health is putting pressure on the organization over the period. And for that, we have about 45 cases that is currently in process. In terms of skills development, Chairperson, seeing that you have a small core of people that you work with, having them multi-skilled in most functions is crucial. So we do concentrate a lot in providing training in terms of services that the department renders. And over the period under review, we had over 200 candidates receiving different levels of training. We also have skills development with stakeholders, where we provide both training for external partners, in this case such as marriage officers. We also provide training to priests and other religious leaders in terms of conducting marriages. And we also provide certain training to South African police services in terms of the understanding of asylum legislation and other immigration matters. Skills overview. Currently, the department in terms of below matrix sits at about 4.3%. Senior certificate in FETs is about 60.5. National diploma is 21.3. And degree holding members is about 13.4. We have a 0.4, which is one member in an honors division. Bursary information, we currently have 6 members that is on the bursary environment. And that is as far as human resource management is going. Slide 41, finance and asset management and supply chain management. For the year that has passed, the department has managed to reach an acceptable level of expenditure in terms of the overall budget. We reached 106% of our budget spent, so it's virtually 100% of our commitments, as indicated previously, paid off within the required period. In terms of procurement and projections over the reporting period, all our expenditure remains in the linear expenditure requirement above the required threshold. In terms of asset management and verification, we've reached a 99.95%, which is 100% in terms of, if you look at the actual figures of verified assets within the province. Again, payments within 30 days, we've reached 100% threshold of all payments done within the required limit. Revenue collection, the province has collected over 19 million rand through their services within the province over the reporting period. Fleet management, it stands to reason with the vastness of the province that our fleet is under pressure most of the time. So we have about the number of vehicles within the province is 68, and these are the vehicles that generally provide the services within the province. Total expenditure on fleet is around about 4.1 million for the period under review. Leases in terms of offices, we have a number of leases currently running within the province, and we also have a number of offices that is based within state-owned buildings. Within the analysis provided, Chairperson, one can clearly see the difference between actual payment on leases and what it costs to sit in a government-owned facility. I think the lowest facility is the one in Jankemdorp, where the lease cost is 1 rand for the facility. So we have, at this point in time, received most of our government-owned facilities from the Department of Public Works, and is actively looking at what is the feasibility of having the department within those local municipalities situated within those facilities. We have identified some of them extremely remote and would not serve any functional reason to locate ourselves in these facilities. But there is some, derelict or not, to look at. Lease periods that is currently up for review and where we will look at state-owned buildings to be improved is in Francis Barth area and in the Pixley Kaseme area. And as I said, the lease periods up for review is the one for Calfinia and Uppington. Public Works is at this point in time responsible to deal with it. Slide 48 deals with counter-corruption and cases that we have. We finalized the number of cases. It ranged from, first one is fraud, the outcome, restoring of citizenship within two fraud cases. And I think the one that is of great importance and sent a good message through the province is suspected fraudulent documents that is used for transaction. And we have charged seven cases through the NPA in this environment, and we have received positive feedback and prosecution of some of these individuals. Some of these cases are not easily detected, but we do deal with them quite aggressively in terms of getting prosecution within the province. Security environment for security services is slide 49. It's also an indication of where we have active security installations within offices in terms of where it should be, but this is an environment that needs attention to improve the security to our offices that is currently operating within the province. We have a number of X-ray machines that is available, but in certain areas it is not optimally functioning. In terms of achievements, Chairperson, one should highlight the fact that we have a close working relationship with our stakeholder forums. These forums provide us the benefit to engage with members at the local level using both political and other interdepartmental structures to support the department's functions. Birth registration, in terms of the registration of birth within in hospital facilities, we have a large percentage of those achieved. Public awareness campaigns, we have 12, around about 10 to 12 local radio stations that we actively engage in providing information to our local communities, and we have partnerships with them trying to reach those areas where the department doesn't have a permanent footprint. Immigration, in terms of our cross-border operations, we have active engagements with cross-border operations with Namibia and Botswana and our partners in dealing with this. The province has the benefit of not having had one civil litigation against them or us in the province for conduct in terms of illegal foreigners in the province. Key challenges and decisions that sometimes needs, or we do believe needs assistance with. Critical staff shortages is one area. Key management positions at provincial and local level remains unfunded. Improved working conditions at front offices, especially due to the remote location of offices. Fees payable to our clients. Sometimes in the province it is virtually 500 rand to travel to a center. And on top of that, to pay 100 or 40 rand for a specific document just breaks the camel's back for some of our public members. So the cost of service to our poorest sometimes becomes a problem, because the transport cost in certain areas by analysis is about 8 times the amount just to get to the office before you pay for the actual service. Lack of mobile services for a province like the Northern Cape is crucial, because the only way you can really take service to the people is through a mobile environment. The inspectorate footprint is important. Just for mere information, Chairperson, if you go to a border post like Rietfontein, the closest house situated to the border post is rented by a Somalian. That means the first house that you reach after you've entered South Africa a Somali national rents the house. So that gives an indication of what is the importance of inspectorate when it comes to where they are located along the borderline and what the function of the borderline is. You also have a number of areas where farms is owned on both sides by one owner. The farmer owning this side and that side is one owner. Therefore, it means when he crosses the borderline, he's actually moving on his own personal property. So these are the environments that poses risks on the borderline. And I think the inspectorate footprint that is currently 9 out of 15 offices within in the province is one of serious concern, especially in relation to the over 4,000 kilometer radius that they cover. Chairperson, Minister, and honorable members, thank you very much. And my humble apologies for the slides not being in proper numerical order. Thank you.
Thank you, Home Affairs. Minister, I think it's unacceptable, we must say it, that documents are not thoroughly being checked before they are being submitted to the portfolio committee. Missing documents. Members get time to read through the document that has been sent through. There's a new information that is coming on a different document. I think we must, I'm not sure, maybe there's an established standard at Home Affairs where documents are brought before the DG and the minister. We're not going to accept that. I hope the next province that is coming is not the same. Minister, I think we must take serious on the matter of documentation to the portfolio committee for members to peruse the document.
Chairperson, I accept fully, and I'm very embarrassed. If the committee agrees, I'll ask you to reject the Northern Cape report and let it be rearranged if you have got time, so that we discuss all the others, because I'm also not happy, I must state. There's no excuse for something like this to happen to all of us. Absolutely not. So if it was in my power, I'll say the report is rejected, it's not accepted, it must be rearranged and come back to the committee. Thank you.
We'll get in that point when we're going to debate. Is it Eastern Cape? Yes. Can we get into Eastern Cape? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Good morning once again, Chairperson, Minister, honorable members, and my colleagues. Chair, I need to move upfront that the issue that we have just raised somehow has happened with this particular one, but in a different way. We had submitted earlier on the submission that we forwarded to Parliament, subject to forward an edited document. But it looks like the preliminary one that we had forwarded is the one that has been forwarded to the members. The one that I have here might have some corrections there and there, but I will indicate.
Can I establish with the members on the Home Affairs reports before you come in the DG, so that we don't run a risk of the same confusion that has been displayed by nothing. Can I establish with members on the issues that are coming out?
Thank you, Chair. Now, on the Eastern Cape, you see, by Friday or last week, we had the three provinces giving submissions, and we had the Eastern Cape one as well. I was surprised that yesterday we're getting a new document, and that was my query. Both have gone through those reports. And so the member will have to help us and indicate that what he sent last week was incomplete and must take responsibility for that, if that is the case. Because I'm here ready to interact with a document that got to me early, that I had over the weekend, not the one I got yesterday. That's where, for me, the gap is.
because we can't be given a document a day before and be expected to come and play an effective oversight role in this meeting.
Thanks, Madam Pamba.
Thanks, Chairperson. Minister, well, maybe let me begin in this way. To pass my condolences to you in the passing of your mother. And we hope that you find comfort in the Lord. But in your absentia, Minister, we faced a similar situation with the previous provinces. At least that's how one experienced it. And I suppose if we are going to reject some of these provinces, we must do it as a matter of principle, because even with the Eastern Cape, it's a similar situation. It might be designed differently. And I think one appreciates that the minister says, look, it must be rejected, as a way of setting a firm and stern way forward, because there's a laissez-faire sort of nonchalant approach when it comes to these documents, as you would have seen. One of which is that even leave the confusion of numbers, just the general information coming out, it doesn't jump to you. You know, you have to, I mean, you will see with the question and answer session, we'll spend hours, which is not something that should happen with the report. The report ought to speak for itself. So, Chairperson, I think that if Eastern Cape now is saying what it's saying, then it's clear on the established principle that the minister has said thus, and therefore if we take that decision, it means most of them will fall, including the ones that are coming. I suppose even the Western Cape one will have a similar situation.
Let me guide on the matter. The previous submissions, briefings, were not the same as this one. The issue was on the format that the portfolio committee in future may need to allow. And we indicated in our last summary that the presentations that have been brought here are also in line with how the IAPP were guided by how the APP has been. So I think I want to assist the meeting that this submission of today, Minister, is totally different in terms of the paging and the documentation of the issue. Honorable Panorama?
Yeah, Chairperson, I've got great difficulty actually in us proceeding in this manner, because Parliament has got a general rule which says documentation must be submitted to us 48 hours, at least 48 hours before we come to a meeting. And yesterday the revised Eastern Cape report was sent to us very late. Now, even in the Northern Cape presentation, there were some of the most important slides there was missing from my pack. For example, when you spoke about, when it highlighted, for example, some of the issues pertaining to challenges, the last slides, the information pertaining to immigration, there was a slide speaking about businesses being owned by Bangladeshi, Pakistani, etc., which wasn't even in my presentation. So it means I came unprepared for this meeting, even though I did prepare myself, which is my difficulty, because we come here, we meet with department or the provinces once a year, or maybe twice a year if we're lucky. But unfortunately, the current situation renders us ineffective in what we're supposed to do. So, you know, I couldn't even see the slides. I just heard what the presentation was saying. And the fact of the matter is, once presentations are not sent to us at least 48 hours before, we should have the right to say that we have to reconvene the meeting in order for members to be prepared. So that is my submission. I don't know how you will want to take this forward, but I think it really renders us ineffective in executing our duties.
Honorable Lekwase, Honorable Ross, and Honorable Kanyile, and Honorable Chanch. Honorable Tidman.
Chair, I want to agree with latter speakers and also express myself on the presentation made by the Northern Cape. Where I'm sitting, I do not know if that's a correct presentation given to us. For example, I realized on slide 31 under immigration, deportations and transfers, the numbers that are written there are not the same numbers that I'm given on the presentation that I'm having. So I'm saying if we reject it,
let's reject it, give them time, go and prepare, and then bring the correct representation to the meeting.
Yes, Chair. I would just like to agree. I think there is that principle of 48 hours, and I think that's something that's been broken here, so specifically for the Eastern Cape and the Northern Cape. What's also worrying is the drastic discrepancy in figures, so I don't know how that happened. It's one thing to say that the format has switched around, but if those figures can be so drastically different, it starts to put into doubt these reports and what kind of numbers we are actually getting, which is a real concern. But I'd also like to support the move to certainly have the Northern Cape and Eastern Cape reports redone and deferred to another date.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I also share the same sentiments that were shared by my colleagues, because initially, at the beginning of this presentation, we were actually misled by the Northern Cape. We were told that there's only going to be a difference in terms of the slides numbering. But when the actual presentation took place, it was a total presentation altogether. And like Honorable Liesel has indicated that there were certain slides that were missing. I even took notes, page 14, 25, 26, and 29. I did not have them in my pack, as well as other concerns that were raised by my colleagues. I also support that we must reject this presentation. Another presentation must be made, and on another date, come back and give us a proper one. Thank you.
Honorable James?
No. Thank you, Chair. I think maybe so that we don't spend much time on these two provinces, because from where I'm sitting, I think it would be good to interface to interact with the Western Cape report on the Northern Cape. I'm not sure if the committee coordinator, for example, what he presented here, was able to share that with you with all the changes. Otherwise, I am in support of the members to say, let's redo. The Northern Cape must be given another time, because even if he makes copies now of what he presented, we would not have time to go through that and interact with those changes. So I want to support that we give them another date, certainly not going to be today. With the Eastern Cape, what I went through, which we got last week, I came here with lots of questions on it. And then you were told yesterday there's a new presentation. So even them, so that we able to, if we call them, we'll call them both on the same day to give us that. Mr. Ross is correct, but I don't know whether the changes were meant to really dribble us. I'll be worried if that would have even an inkling to do that, because we do our work, we do read. I'm hoping I'm wrong on that, because it would be unacceptable if that would be the situation. So I just want to support the members that I think let's pull back both Northern Cape and Eastern Cape for proper preparations.
DG, I see your hand, and or the minister. In terms of scenario, do you agree with that?
No, he can come later. Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much. I accept all the criticisms and the ruling made, but I want to ask the committee to also bear with me, specifically as a minister and the DG. When I arrived in Home Affairs, I was told that the practice by committees is that we must never, as nationals, interfere with reports from provinces, because we sanitize them. And in trying to be honest to that, I never interfered with what they are presenting. I thought it must come as they've prepared it. Now that we see weakness, because I don't want to praise myself, but I don't usually miss numbers and statistics, I would have picked it up immediately. But I was told that when we interfere with them, if members of committee pick up, they reject the report on the basis that we easily sanitize it. You want to see it as it's alive. Now, unfortunately, unlike in the department where I was, we don't have provinces. It's still us.
So I would like the committee to allow me. If reports are going to come here and members receive very good policies, that issue must be set aside. I must be able to call them and say, look, what is this? What do you mean here? Because I also know what members want in most cases, because both me and you are politicians. They are not. So I will go and sit with them and say, present to me and let me hear what they are perfect. I will try my best not to hide anything. Anyway, it's difficult to hide because we are going to go there one day and find the facts. All I will do is to guide them. Because I agree with you. I agree with members who said even the missing pages. It was misleading because the gentleman said, the acting district manager said, look, bear with me about the pages. But during the presentation, it was not pages. I saw new slides, which were never there before. And so I don't even know what question you are going to ask, because I too will not be able to ask any question if we are given a chance. Thanks.
Director General.
No, thanks, Chair. I think the Minister has dealt with the issues I wanted to raise, that it has been an established practice that we don't even sign off. I don't even sign off those, but we will deal with that. I also agree that to let them be sent back, and then we'll revise them, and I will supervise that. Honourable
Quota. If you... The mic.
It was incorrect, I think, for anybody to suggest to the minister that he can lead his team to bring the report here without him having been given a chance to look at through all of those reports, because strictly speaking, it is the minister who is now reporting to us, because having satisfied himself, this is accurate from the department. So, and that... with regard to that, I think we should allow the minister to go back and look at these things. And then when they come, they must have the approval of the minister. Thank you.
Can I check the last hand so that it appears you have, you won't?
No, I've been covered by Honourable Lakota, because I think sanitizing a presentation and correcting discrepancies is two different things. So we must allow the minister, when he sees that there are gaps in presentations, to correct them. I don't think that should be seen as sanitizing. Thank you.
I think the principle, Minister, is that all provinces were here, the previous ones that gave reports. And if we may need to take that approach, that the minister could have authorized all the reports that were already presented. But of emphasis is that all the reports were presented well. We must indicate that, except for today of Northern Cape and the... can I establish Eastern Cape, your changes in terms of the previous reports and the one that was sent yesterday?
Thank you, Chair. What happened, there was a preliminary submission that we made, Chair, in respect of which we thought that we would be given a chance to present a final draft, you know, to head office through to Parliament. Now, we realized during the week that there was a report, a presentation that was used, which was indicating that it's still the preliminary one, which had not been there. Been dealt with by head office. It was head office that gone through with us advised there and there what is it that we must do, where figures were not tallying. Then only to realize in the course of the week that it was the initial one, not the one we had engaged. Hence, we had to forward. I think that's where the one you're talking about comes in. When we realize that no, there are things, quite a number of things that are missing from that preliminary one, hence we had to forward it. And we realized that there were some mistakes there and there in terms of figures. That was the part I was specifically raising that I will be correcting as I move on with the presentation. I also apologize, Chair, for that.
Honourable Chair, then we try to...
his last input still confirms that they must go back. There's nothing attractive in what he says that I must ask him to present. So he must go back, certainly from where I'm sitting. And just to add to Ndate Lekota, you see, if such a decision was taken by the fifth parliament, whoever the sixth parliament, I don't remember us taking that decision, that the minister or the DG, the provinces must just come to it, because I have questions here that go beyond provinces that you must answer as head office. So I don't know where that thing came from. So it certainly it didn't come from this committee. So please don't bring us historical stuff.
Thank you. We're going to refer back for relook on your reports, both the Eastern Cape and the Northern Cape. Can I check Western Cape? Is the same?
Yeah, it's the same report we submitted on Thursday. Our head office submitted to Eddie on Thursday. So it's the same report that I'm assuming members have in front of them.
Proceed. There's tea and coffee, colleagues can quietly walk if you will. Western Cape?
Thank you, Chair, and again, good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members, and Minister as well. Chair, I brought a big team with me today because we are all locals here. Nobody flew in. So it was, we're all from here, so I thought it's best if I bring the managers as well so that they can, like the interaction we just had, experience firsthand the fire and the heat we get when we come to portfolio committee, and that's why the demands on us to deliver services is so huge, Chair. So my presentation, some of the slides, we've got 69 slides, Chair, but some of the slides is for information and for noting of the portfolio committee as well. We just wanted to put as much information as we could into the slides. So the overview is going to look at how the province is set up as part of the table of contents on slide 2. Then we're going to go on the war on queues, which is more the service delivery parts. The waiting in queues parts, Chair, that we want to talk about that, and because for us in the Western Cape, the city of Cape Town, what we deal with is high volumes. In the morning before we open, there's already 400 people queuing, so it's how do we manage that? That's a different type of service delivery as the Northern Cape indicated before. And then we want to go to our resources. We'll take you through our staff, etc., and all of those, Chair, you'll see it in the slides. We'll then go to our stakeholder engagements in terms of immigration. We've got a number of slides there, as well as civic outreach programs. As you know, Chair, Western Cape, the fire disasters, flood disasters, that's where we play a role. So we want to take the committee through that. And then we'll end off with our APP targets. How did we perform? Not only the first quarter of this year, Chair, but we wanted to take the committee back to the last 3 years as well, just to see how we've done for the last 3 years in the Western Cape. So the next slide, 4, is the layout of the Western Cape province. As you can see, we have 6 districts, Chair, 1 metro, which is the city of Cape Town, and then we have 5 district municipalities, which is called the West Coast, Cape Winan, Central Karoo, Overberg and the Garden Route, Chair. Then we also have our ports of entries, which report directly to our head office. We have the seaport of Cape Town, we have the seaport of Saldanha and Mossel Bay, as well as the International Airport of Cape Town and the Refugee Reception Center here in Cape Town as well. What's significant of this map, Chair, and when I get to it, is that small district there, or metro, called City of Cape Town, where 60% of the population we serve is situated right there in the metro, and that puts a whole different spin on how we deliver services here in the Western Cape. The next slide is our, this is our team, some uniformed, some not uniformed, but they are all in the room here with me today. It's myself on top, it's our coordinators, Ms. van der Berg, our finance directors, Ms. Slow, our head of the Cape Metro, as well as the Overberg district who deals with service delivery. The three of them there is Ms. Sakauli, Ms. Michaels, and then also we have Dr. Ngaka. We are proud of him, Chair, because he graduated in his PhD a year ago. That's where he's sitting at the back. So Western Cape has a doctor here as well, doctor. This is the three of them again, just to indicate how it was at the end of June and how the group, the officers under these district managers. The Cape Metro has got 6 offices. For those huge populated area in the city of Cape Town, we have 6 big offices that service them. We can actually include Somerset West there as well, Chair. Then we have one bank, and then the Overberg area has got 4 offices. The Cape Winelands also there, 6 offices plus 5. And then the Gardenhout and Central Karoo has got 8 offices that the doctor is responsible for. We wanted to balance the workload and the responsibility, because even though we have 6 districts, we only have 3 district managers. So we manage and we balance the workload amongst the 3 of them. Chair, this is an important slide for us, is our governance, our Western Cape governance is how are we structured. The most important part is how do we communicate, work together in the province, how do we communicate downwards, how do we govern ourselves, how do we structure ourselves, not only in terms of service delivery, but also in terms of compliance on audit issues and all of those, Chair. So it starts with our EXCO, which we meet every Monday in my office. That's a 2-hour meeting, strictly from 9 till 11, Chair. We look at what happened the past week and we set our parameters, what happens the next week. 11 o'clock, we're done, we go back to our desks and we work, and we then the next week we come together to see whether we were successful or not. I'm not going to read the whole slides, Chair, with your permission. I'm sure the members had enough time to go through the document. Followed by that is the extended EXCO meeting we have, and this is extended and it happens now bi-monthly. We used to have it monthly, Chair, but because of cost-cutting measures and having everyone travel in, we decided to have it bi-monthly. And let me also say on the EXCO, Dr. Ngaka sits in George. So what we do is we don't let him travel to Cape Town every Monday. We do a telephone conference with him. Every Monday we hook up. So he communicates, he participates in meetings by teleconference on a Monday morning. So the extended EXCO, we come together, and here we include a corruption report, counter-corruption come and present, the vetting come and presents, the HR matters, labor relations issues, and then Motapeli is for us the leadership program. It's how do we reward and recognize good performance, Chair. So that representative also comes and presents to the EXCO. Then we have our extended management meetings. This is where all managers come together bi-monthly. We then reflect also on our performance, whether we're achieving the targets, not achieving, service delivery issues. We also have our youth forum who come and present their action plan. We have our disability forum who sits there, as well as our organized labor. We have 3 unions in the Western Cape. They participate in our management meetings because we want to create that culture of working together with our organized labor, Chair. This is some of the other governance forums that we have. It's the Provincial Consultative Forum. We are now on slide 8, Chair and members. This is where we meet every quarter with all organized labor. Labor comes with all the issues from the employers, employees, and we from the employer side also bring our issues. I chair that forum, Chair. That's just to create harmony in the workplace and to deal with matters before it gets to grievances and those matters. So that forum exists. And then every month, the staff meetings from 8 o'clock till 9 o'clock for all Home Affairs offices, there are staff meetings. So the important part of this structure, Chair, is that communication flows from head office down to the lowest level in office level. I attend the national forum meetings with the DG, the minister. I come back to the EXCOs on Monday. I report back. the DMOs take it to their meetings. We have management meetings, and so the messages, office meetings go right to the end, to the bottom, and we also include organized labor so that if a manager doesn't communicate, your labor unions are there as well to communicate to staff. We have our procurement, provincial procurement committee, which are director finance chairs, as well as the loss committee that also courtly sits, then the youth forum and the SheRefs forum that deals with health and safety issues in the workplace chair. There's also a forum that's chaired by the director asset and property. They meet quarterly. The youth forum just met on Friday, Chair, and I was with them. They have now been appointed as change agents for the repositioning of home affairs, so their task is to go down to the lower levels to their peers, because all young, fairly junior staff, identified, trained now as change agents, they go down and they communicate about the repositioning of home affairs. So that's the network that head office created that we're also following in the Western Cape. So the next one is the footprint. This is how we are situated in the Western Cape. We've got 29 offices throughout the Western Cape in the 5 districts and 1 metro. We have a permanent point, service point in Ladysmith. What that means is that it's a small community in Ladysmith, Chair and members, so we don't need to be there every day. So by arrangement with the municipality has given us space for free of charge there, so we go there on a Tuesday and a Thursday at a scheduled time to service that community. We have 1 bank in Canal Walk. We have the provincial office, which it's not separate from our regional office, it's just down the corner in Parastriche on the 4th floor. So just to save cost, we move in with the regional office. We now operate in Barrack Street as 1 office. So we're also there on the ground to help deal with service delivery matters. And then we have a provincial archiving facility that we created in Bellville office, so that all our archiving is in one place. Offices struggle with a lot of documents, etc. So we created the centralized archiving unit to assist with the storing of documents. Just on the column side of this slide here, on slide 9, there's 25 of our 29 offices are modernized. That's 86%. 11 of them are in the urban areas and 14 are in the rural areas. They're all modernized, and 1 bank. So we only have 4 remaining offices to be modernized. Our Mamasbury office, which was closed in 2017 by the landlord, Chair, took us to court. He basically kicked us out. The municipality wasn't assisting, but now we are opening a new office in November in Mamasbury, also modernized, and it's much bigger than the previous one. Also, we're rolling out 2 additional banks in the quarter 2, which is in Portside FMB, as well as Nedbank, just here in St. George's Mall, close to Parliament, Chair. And the 3rd one in quarter 3 will be Absa Bank in Claremont. So when these other 3 banks also come here in the city of Cape Town, comes on board, it will really help us with the congestion we have in our offices. So we're looking forward for that, and that's very close. The equipment has already arrived, so it's the connectivity issues that they're working with now, Chair. Then the next 2 offices to be modernized for Western Cape will be Friedenberg and Citrus Dow offices. That will happen in the 4th quarter this year. They are being refurbished now, Chair. Friedenberg is particularly important for us because it forms part of that hub, economic hub, which is Sultana Bay. Huge population, fast-growing population, so it's important that we also have our modernized office in Friedenberg, Chair. Then the last 2 would be then Swellendam and Lanesburg. That's not modernized now at the moment, and they are earmarked for modernization in quarter 4 of next financial year, if there is money, Chair. But if that happens, Chair, it means that 100% of offices in the Western Cape would be, by the end of next financial year, will be modernized, which means that we do not do green ID books here then anymore from henceforth, and that would also assist the communities, because really they do not want the green book. They want the smart card. So if the mobile units come on board, and that, Chair, then it'd be a vast improvement as well, the last 2 modernized offices. The next one is just to indicate the population number, Chair, and members of the 3 directors that I indicated, the district managers, as I indicated, and this data comes from socio-economic profile of Western Cape. This is the stats we received. Is the metro has got 4.5 million people in the city of Cape Town. So it's a huge, out of the 6.5 million, two-thirds is in the city of Cape Town. Then the Overberg has got 200,000 population there. The next biggest one is the Cape Winelands area, the Paarl area, the Worcester area, etc. It's got 864 population. Then the West Coast is 433,000. The Garden Route, which is your George, Mossel Bay, Plettenberg Bay, Knysna areas, has got 609 population. And our smallest rural area, Chair, which is, reminds me very much about the Northern Cape, is Central Karoo, at 75,000, sparsely populated area, wide distances to travel there as well, Chair. Chair, this is our immigration, the next slide, we're in our slide 11, our immigration structure. We have appointed four assistant directors. Assistant directors is a middle manager, Chair. We really should have a senior manager dealing with immigration, but at the moment we can only manage with middle managers. But there's four dedicated assistant directors that deals with immigration in the different districts. They are just focused full-time on immigration, Chair. This is just the expansion. The next slide is slide 12. It's the expansion of our footprint. This is what happened over the past 6 years. We've established these nine offices, and you can see that these are all rural areas, far-lying areas. So that was our focus for the past 6 years, is to how do we take our service further to the rural, far-lying communities, Chair. So these are the offices that's indicated there. It's Atlantis, Bredasdorp, Sierras, Robertson, Prince Albert, Mossel Bay, Ladysmith, Riversdale, and Friedenberg. And I must say, Chair, as we were fortunate because we worked closely with the Tusong Center. So when a Tusong Center was planned for a particular area, we'll jump on board and we'll give them the specifications we have. And when they erect and they develop and build it, they build it to our specification. So you'll find if you go to some of these Tusong Centers, it's not small little offices, it's bigger offices built for Home Affairs because we were part of the planning in those Tusong centers. It's owned by the municipality, so our rental there is also fairly low, Chair. These are just some of the burning issues we have. There's always burning issues, Chair. So these are the ones we have with facilities. The Friedenberg office, we had a termination of the lease there that we received from a landlord, but fortunately, the municipality came on board now and offers us a state-owned building, Chair. This is great for us because now we're investing money in a state-owned building. It will be modernized, to be refurbished. So going forward, that would be one of our areas that we'd be very proud of because it's fast-growing, that particular area. Malmesbury, as I indicated before, we evicted there, but in 2019. And the sad part of this is, Chair, we had to advertise the tender twice. That's why it took so long, from 2017 to 2019. But unfortunately, through the public works processes, we now at least we are almost ready to open in November this year. Then Mitchell's Plain office is very small, congested, Chair. You know the population is huge in Mitchell's Plain. We have occupational health and safety issues. Labor Department closed us earlier this year. We had to fix the office. We've gone out on tender three times, and we have now found suitable accommodation, but there might be, again, a technical problem with the tender procedures. So Public Works has given us notice that we might have to go out on tendering for a fourth time, Chair. It's very sad, this one, because we are really struggling in the Mitchell's Plain area. The next three slides, honorable members and chairs, just for information, is where to find us. It's just the office, the district where we are, the local municipality, whether it's urban or rural, and the street address. I included that if members get queries from clients, etc., where's the Home Affairs in Western Cape, you can refer to these slides and give them the physical addresses as well. So with your indulgence, Chair, I'm just going to go past the next slide and then get to slide that says number of YAL facilities. So, Chair, this is the number of YAL facilities we have. We have 53 that's public YAL facilities with maternity units. our head office has on their schedule, they have 61 chair because they also include the clinics. So we did not include the clinics there and the referral hospitals. These are full-time maternity hospitals we have in the Western Cape. I know the minister the other day came and presented chair and opened our eyes to say that we always assume there's 800 health facilities, but minister, because from where minister comes, says no, there's 1,400, and we need to connect them all, 1,440. So that's a project that we're undertaking. Out of those, we have 29 chair that's connected. We had 41, but some of them have connection problems. But at the currently connected and functional is 29. The staff that's deployed to health facilities, we have 9 permanent level 5 posts. A level 5 is somebody who works at a health facility permanently. They just register birth and death. So we have 9 of those dedicated to health facilities at the major health facilities. Then we use in total about 30 of our staff, level 6, 30 level 6. If you look at the far right column, additional capacity deployed, we deploy them, our level 6s that's supposed to be at the counters. We have to go register births, so we deploy them to health facilities so that the mother doesn't leave the health facility if she has not registered the baby. So we use our other staff also every day to go out to health facilities. Some of the challenges maybe at the health facility is space, but I'll get to birth registration and some of the challenges. See, this is just some of the highlights we included, put in photos also, Chair, with your indulgence. This is the, we are proud of this event, the Valentine's Day event, solemnizing marriages on Robben Island. It's a very historic event and it gets a lot of publicity for the department. So we're proud of that. We've been doing it since 2000, Chair. It's been 18 years now that we've been doing, running this event. The other one is we officially opened this year Stellenbosch as a modernized office, also huge area, Stellenbosch, Chair and members, because that's where the university is there. There's also a huge demand. There's a huge informal area, Chair. So now we are modernized there. We also opened a new modernized office for Grabo, which is also a huge community. You understand the needs in the Grabo area, Chair, and the farm workers there. So we've now modernized that also, and that happened just last year. Some of the further highlights, Chair, is we work closely with the prisons. As you can see, it's just a picture to show that we work with correctional services so that they bring in their prisoners to apply for smart cards. Also the Army, Chair, in Oudtshoorn, the Army base is there, the training center, so they come for passports and smart cards. And then, of course, every year, New Year's Day, we do birth registration on the first of the new year to welcome the new babies into the year. So we did that again this year in Tygerberg Hospital. Now, Chair, I want to go to our slide that speaks to client care and our slide that speaks to the war on cues and what are we doing in terms of this. So firstly, for us, as I indicated before, in the metro, we deal with volumes. In some of our other offices, we open the door at 8 o'clock or even before 8, and there's no clients. We wait for the clients to come in. In the city of Cape Town, in the metro, from 6 o'clock, the clients start queuing. When we open the door at 8 o'clock, Chair, there's already 300 persons standing in the queue. So if you are queuing number 300, you'll have to wait for the others before you to finish their service before you can get into the office. Normally the service from reaching our meter greeter inside the office to when you leave is about not even 30 minutes. It's about 12 minutes just to process a application, Chair. That's what the system can do. The challenge is the volumes are high. That is the challenge. If you number 300, you'll spend those 12, 15 minutes in there, but the waiting outside is what you're going to complain about, because it's going to take you 3 hours to get inside because of the high volumes. And Chair, you experienced it last week when you applied for your passport. Minister Chairperson was there. And as you applied, the system went offline. So that also happens, or the system goes slow. And if that happens, it just builds up. This 300 builds up, the pressure builds up, the clients become angry, our staff is under pressure, And then the situation becomes just difficult to manage here. But this is day in and day out in the metro here. I'm sure in Johannesburg it's the same as the volume of clients. And as you know, Chair, that when you get into a Home Affairs, you have to queue quite four times, actually. You queue outside to get to the meter greeter. You queue at the photo booth. You then queue at the FRO where you do your application. And then you go queue at to pay, and then you leave. That's how the system is designed, Chair, and this is part of the challenges that we're trying to look at and how to speed up the flow of that. But if you have more staff, your process will go faster. Just that's how it works. Unfortunately, and I'll show later in the presentation, we've lost a high number of staff. We're still losing staff, Chair, as we are sitting here, and we cannot fill it because our compensation of employee ceiling doesn't allow us to fill posts for now. So this is some of the struggles we have. But let me go to what are we doing then to deal with this problem that I've just indicated or outlined. So we have improved our management capability and leadership. We appointed district managers. So there on the floor, you will see a district manager of operations, Ms. Sakauli, sitting here. She just came back yesterday. She broke her ankle, was off 2 months. Doctor said she should off for 3 months, but she's back here today to be at portfolio committee. But you'll normally find her in Barrack Street in the front before it opens to be there with the clients. So that's their responsibility. Chair, we have also divided our queues in three areas. We keep applications separate, collections separate, because collections is a quicker process. You're not going to pay. You're not going to go to a photo booth. You're just there to pick up your smart card or your passport. We always say that you've already gone through the pain of waiting when you applied. You mustn't go through the pain a second time when you come and collect. So many times we even open before 8 o'clock because they stand separately and we bring the collections up because that's a quick process. You don't need cashier to be in place or anything for that. We created a separate meter greeter in some offices for that as well, Chair. So we keep applications, collections, and then the legacy, which is your birth, marriage, and death applicants, we keep them separate because that's more a manual process. What we also do, Jay, is we do prioritize the elderly, pregnant mothers, mothers with infants, scholars we should actually add there, as well as persons with disabilities, Jay. We do prioritize them. But it's so funny, as you must see the queue sometimes, members and Jay, that when we prioritize the elderly lady, you'll find the youngsters complaining about it. That's what we find. It's just amazing sometimes to see what happens when you prioritize one of these categories that come there, how the other clients would react. Sometimes very sad to see that as well. Scholars accompanied by parents, we prioritize them because our position in the department is scholars should be in school, not standing in a queue in Home Affairs. So when they have a uniform on, we bring them in with the mother because the mother has to be there. We service them first and they go back to school, Chair. It's compulsory also for us, and managers are managed on this one. You'll see a checklist that we have to manage this, is that the office manager, who is the head of that office, is the one in charge, or she is the one in charge, must be there prior to the office open, outside the office, engage with the staff. Tell them that we're going to open now. Are you in the right queue? Do you have the right document? Not only a floor walker, Chair. We want the leader to be out there. So that is part of their performance agreement, and that's how we measure them. Once the office starts, in every 2 hours, they can go down to see that services are progressing, Chair. Then floor walkers must be on site. It's also one of their performance agreements. So floor walkers, when I get to an office and I don't see a floor walker, the manager must explain in writing, where's your floor, because it's part of your performance agreement. We also have a radio bulletin, Chair, and I hope to play it to you soon. The minister is aware of this. It's what we call a voice clip. It's like we call it a bulletin. It's like a traffic report, Chair. So every day, 8 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and 2 o'clock, we put out a voice clip to say, this office is congested, or high volumes or low volumes go to the alternative office. So we identify high offices with current high volumes and offices with low volumes so that we give our clients, the metro is very accessible. We give our clients the opportunity and the choice, an alternative to go to other office instead of standing in a queue. It helps us also, Chair, to take the pressure off some of our high-volume offices and redirect clients to other offices. That we do every day. Unfortunately, some radio stations want money for us. There's one radio station who does it free of charge. It's Voice of the Cape, and they've been doing it free of charge every day since we started. And Minister was personally there also to thank them the other day. We are working with GCIS, Chair, to expand this further from a voice clip to a video clip as well that we can put on social media that people can just access. So before you decide to go to Home Affairs, all you do is look at the message and say, okay, where is they busy and not busy, and you decide. 8 o'clock, that's for when people come to the office to decide which one to go to. We put a 12 o'clock chair so that when people go on lunch, they need to know which office is best to go during lunchtime. 2 o'clock, we put it there, is when they pick up the children or you want to go home earlier, you want to go to Home Affairs, you get that option at that time in the afternoon as well. Then we have Motapeli rating cards, Chair. I will talk about that later in the presentation. And then continuous communication with clients and redirecting them as indicated before, Chair. This is the bulletin that I spoke about earlier, the voice clips. It's real time. We have a network where all office managers at a certain time need to send their information to the manager to say whether they're online. So we report on this voice clip whether the system is working, it's stable, it's online or not, what the client volumes are. We redirect clients to lower volume offices. We also market the DHA service. We say there, register your baby within 30 days. That's your responsibility. We also market the call center, Chair, contact center, because we don't want clients to phone us for queries. It takes all our time up if we're just dealing with queries instead of managing. So we refer them to the call center, and these are the time slots we're using. As indicated, Voice of the Cape are helping us with voice clips and video clips, and GCS will look at creating another platform for us. We have the voice clip, Chair. Maybe we should listen to it afterwards, or I don't know, Chair, you can advise.
Present.
Department of Home Affairs, Western Cape. All offices in the Cape Metro and Overberg are fully functional, except for Nyanga office, which remains offline due to damage to the server, and can only render services such as the application and printing of birth, marriage, and death certificates, as well as the issuance of temporary identity certificates. Client volumes are moderate at all offices. Please note, online applications for ID smart cards and South African passports can be applied and paid for through the e-Home Office platform at www.dha.gov.za and can be finalized at the preferred Home Office office. For any inquiries, please contact the Home Office Contact Center at 0800 60 11 90. Remember, it is your civil responsibility to register your newborn baby within 30 days of birth. We keep.
This report is brought to you by the Department of Home Affairs, we call the WeCare. Systems are functional at all of Home Affairs offices. The Nyanga office is currently rendering online birth, marriage, and death registration services. Client volumes are high at the Bellville and the Wynberg office. Clients are therefore advised to use Somerset West, Khayelitsha, and Cape Town offices where the client volumes are currently low to be. The Home Affairs office at Standard Bank Canal Walk has certain appointments for the day and 47 slots available for Standard Bank clients to access DHA services. Remember, it is law and your civil responsibility to register your newborn baby within 30 days of the day of the birth.
Thank you, Chair. As I said, we have the network that we can create this every day because we get the flow of information. I'll continue, Chair and members. The other platform that we use to communicate is Cape Talk. We have a very good relationship with Cape Talk on various matters on home affairs, as indicated there, the smart card, the online status, the LGBTI issues. We go there and deal with questions from the public. During the elections also, late registration of processes, choice of surnames, undocumented minors and learners in schools. These were all calling programs that we attended at Cape Talk. At Radio Sonas Grenze also, there were interests on surname changes and the smart card requirements. Radio Sikoneli in Khayelitsha also on DHA services. We also collaborated in Eden FM and the George Herald, as well as ENCA had an interview they wanted to conduct with us on a very successful duplicate case that we completed, so they were very interested in that, as well as an indicated Voice of the Cape. This is a Mota Pele rating cards that I spoke to earlier. Chair, it's the program that we have. It's in line with the war on cues, and it assists the war on cues so that we can improve our service delivery. We developed a reporting tool and a structure also for all officers to report into it. We receive inputs from clients or recorded on a rating card, and it's attended to by managers on the spot, and these are also discussed at extended management meetings, so that if clients raise complaints, we bring it to extended management meetings, so that all the managers can get to get an understanding of what's the feedback we get from clients. Chair. This is just a rating card. The next slide, slide 24. This is a rating card we developed. So we just wanted, clients don't have time after they've waited a long time. You don't want to ask them 10 questions. Chair. We just asked them 4 key questions. We wanted to make this simple. We just want to know, did the attending official serve you with a smile? Was the official's conduct professional? Are you satisfied with our service? And the important one for me and the leadership to know is, were you approached by the office manager and the floor walker when you entered the office? Because normally when that happens, number 4, Chair, the clients are more relaxed because they will know, they will have the information. So we give this to the clients after the service has been conducted, when they leave the office. This is just then the tool that we use, Chair. The next slide, slide 25, is when we get all the rating cards, Chair, and I will quickly explain it to you, we put it on this tool and it's presented at our management meeting so that we can see how we performed in terms of the rating from the clients. This is what we developed ourselves, Chair and members. So there's your first, your questions on top, is our 4 questions from the rating card. It's, did you, the attending official serve you with a smile? That's the percentages. The total number in week 1 is the total of rating cards we received. Chair, if I just go to the monthly, just as a summary, for example, this is the July 2019 rating cards, just 2 months ago, Chair. So the total cards we received on that question of did the attending official serve you with a smile, 646 completed that line. And out of that, North said it was poor, 3 was said it was fair, and excellent was 97. So if I go to the important one that I indicated, is the last one, the last question, were you approached by the office manager, floor walker, when you entered the office? So if you look for the month, there were 463 comments we received back. 3 of them said poor, which means there was no manager or floor walker. 23% said fair, which means there was a person, but person couldn't help them properly. 73% said it was excellent. The manager, supervisor, they got the information. So in the whole month of July, we received 2,647, right at the end here, where it says overall analysis in yellow, 2,647 responses. 4 said poor overall, 17 were 4, were fair, and 79% were saying excellent, Chair. But we don't just want numbers. So I want to see in our management meetings the actual cards. So the next slide will show you the actual cards and actual comments from the clients, and they put their cell phone numbers on there as well, Chair. So that is the Belva ones. Maybe I can't see now, I must put on my specs, Chair. The queues were long, paid online, but still had to wait. and is done 3 to 5 hours, cannot apply for a second passport same day. So we take this, we phone the client here. A lot of the clients complain about they've applied online, which means they've paid, and they completed the forms. Now why must they wait in the queue with everyone else? At some offices, we're in Belleville and Cape Town, where we have the infrastructure, we keep a separate queue for them. But in other offices, if you take them to the front, the ones who are queuing, just creates chaos. Because why must these ones jump the queue just because they use the internet? They must queue as we are queuing. So the ideal would be to have a facility, a photo booth. Basically, you need a photo booth and a separate area just for online applicants that come into the office, because their function is also quick. They don't pay. They just go photo booth and FLO and they leave the office check. But these are some of the rating cards. I've left it in the presentation. There's more rating cards. There's the PAR office as well. And Mitchell's Plain. Mitchell's Plain, there was a rating card on the cleaning there. Because of the high volumes, the cleaning, you need to, that also told us we need to speed up or put more attention on the cleaning there. We've got a cleaning service there in Mitchell's Plain going, appointed now. So these rating cards also help you to address certain of the problems, Chair. Now I'll go to resources, Chair. We're now on slide 29. The first one is our staff breakdown, Chair. This is just a breakdown. 54% of our staff is situated in the Cape Metro, because that's where the volume of our clients are. 15% in the Cape Winelands. Again, Chair, I'm not going to go through the numbers individually. It's just to indicate that this is the number of the total staff. We've broken it down into staff working in civic services, staff dedicated to immigration, and then the support staff, which is your office manager, your cleaners, security, state accountants, HR, etc. Chair. So it's just a, if I maybe just go to the last slide as a summary, which is slide number 32 on staff breakdown, Chair and members. This is the breakdown. So in Western Cape, we have 528 staff. 397 is dedicated to service delivery, which is our counters and our hospitals and our outreach programs. We have 47 immigration, and I'll come to immigration, Chair, because that is really a big concern, the 47 that we only have, and we have 60 staff dealing with the support services. As I indicated, 53% of our staff is in the Cape Metro, and they contribute to 80% of actually our APP targets. So the volumes for our APP targets is generated within the Cape Metro area. This is the capacity that we lost. Since February 2018, Western Cape alone has lost 31 posts. And one of them is the office head of Barrack Street. The biggest office here next to Parliament does not have an office manager. We lost that post last year, and we cannot fold it because of funding pressures. So that is a concern for us. We lost 26 front office clerks for our counters. That also challenges us when we roll out further banks. We have just had to use 4 of our staff that's working in Barrack Street, Cape Town office, to go work in the bank in Portside. But with the triple P coming on in place next financial year, that will resolve the issue with staffing at banks. Then our immigration, that is a lack of capacity, and I'll come to immigration in separate slides. Chair, this is our equity targets. For African female, we have 35% male, it's almost 20%. Colored is 20% male, female, sorry, and 15% male. We have about, say, 1% Indian. 7 of our staff are Indian, and 6.8% is female, and 1.3% is male. So in total, if you just, and then for persons with disability, Chair, we have now, we lost 4 posts for persons with disability. We now, and which reduced our percentage now for 1.9%. We used to have 3% persons with disability over the threshold, Chair. Now we're at 1.9% because we lost four of our persons with disability and we could not fill those posts. If we could have filled those posts, it would have been earmarked for persons with disability as well. The male representativity in Western Cape is we are 37% male and 63% of the 500 that we are here are female. In terms of our executive for Western Cape SMS level, we are three are females and two are males, which means we are 60% female in the executive in Western Cape. In terms of vetting, Chair, that's just a slide to give a comparison between valid vetting clearances from 2007 last financial year, 2017-18 compared to 2018-19, Chair. That's the difference between the top secret, secret, confidential, and in process. And then also those without clearances, as you can see, that's for me always the critical one. There were 157 in the year 17-18. There's now 38 without the clearances. 18 has expired in terms, and last it was 10. So the 38 is what we have a full-time vetting officer at deputy director level, but there's still, Chair, as you know, a high dependency on SSA to assist us with the vetting, especially because the process for vetting, even confidential, previously did not have to undergo interviews. Now you also have to do interviews for relatives, etc., Chair. So that takes a bit more time. The next slide is on skills development. This is the number of staff trained from February till August, now February this year, till August, Chair, 605. And this is the different categories. Naturalization, we issued more than 300 naturalization certificates, and we had ceremonies in Western Cape to do that as well, Chair. And there's ongoing modernization training. The next slide is on our wellness. Chair, I moved a bit quickly from the vet. The skills development, but those are all the training programs we undertook. I'm sure the members can read this. If we go to just the wellness activities, Chair, we just wanted to show that we still have a functioning wellness unit, even though we do not have appointed wellness official. But for Mandela Day, we had all our officers in Oudtshoorn. They spoiled clients with coffee and tea, also with cookies, etc. In George also, the homeless had received some home soup and bread. In George office also, Chair, those poor people who couldn't pay for smart cards on that day, the staff actually contributed from their pockets to pay for smart cards that side. Also here in Cape Town, we had soup kitchens, Chair, for the persons living in shelters. If we go to the workplace forums, Chair, which is now on slide 39, we have the functioning youth forum established, and our director of finance sitting right behind me is their mentor. We have the chairperson, as well as the disability forum, and our other district manager, Ms. Michaels, is their mentor, so that we also help these forums. Sometimes forums need guidance, Chair, and also to help them maintain action activities, because sometimes they get a bit quiet, so the mentors are there to steer them with the action plans. These are Motapeli Awards, which is our rewards and recognition we have, as indicated also before. It's for staff who wins the extra mile. We do not work over weekends, Chair, but we register babies after hours happens. Babies happen after hours and on weekends. So we have a lot of staff that also volunteer on Saturdays and Sundays, these services. So we recognize them, and these are the different categories. We had our ceremony this year, in our financial year, Chair, because we achieved all our targets. So we wanted to celebrate, so we had that event for best performing official and best performing office, and the willingness to work on Saturdays, and inspectorate best performers and dedicated services. And also for us, a big achievement, Chair, is the last 3 years, on the last 2 years, we've achieved 100% on paying off invoices within 30 days, thousands of invoices. So if we can do it 100%, it's for us a big achievement. So we celebrated that. This is just some of the photos that we had the celebrations on. Unfortunately, we didn't have any financial incentive, but certificates and appreciation that we gave them was well appreciated from them. If we now go to employee engagement, Chair, which is slide 43, This is our labor relations unit. This is just in terms of misconduct cases, lodged with 6 finalized, 4 and 2 pending. And there's also the cases that 2 concerned misuse of government vehicles, sanctions were issued. 2 cases of fraud and corruption. 1 was finalized, a dismissal, Chair. The person actually resigned, but we didn't accept the resignation because we wanted to dismiss this person within 60 days so that the person never joins government service again. The case is still, the person spent time in prison as well. The criminal case is still proceeding. The other accomplice hearing is actually on Thursday and Friday, Chair, continuing with that hearing. Negligence and dereliction of duty, also we had a case of that, and there's a case of sexual harassment that happened in Khayelitsha office. That hearing happened last week, so that has been finalized, Chair, as well. We're waiting for the outcome. In terms of our counter-corruption cases, number of cases received in quarter one reported to our counter-corruption unit were 8, and there were the different, it was fraud, identity fraud, fraudulent death certificates, case of corruption, aiding and abetting, misuse of government vehicles, and non-compliance to policy, Chair. We finalized our unit. We have deputy director and assistant director, 2 members of the counter-corruption unit. They finalized that investigation, 3 of those, and 2 has disciplinary action has resulted in that. In terms of security, we do not have a security manager, but we have appointed all officers as fire marshals and she reps. And then also we have our, we are busy finalizing our evacuation plans and our fire drills, Chair. This is our fleet. Okay. I'll move faster now. This is our fleet, Chair. You can see the fleet. This is, we have 101 vehicles. 86 are departmental vehicles, which we do not pay rental on, and 15 is vehicles that we're renting. And that's a breakdown of the vehicles. This is our budget, Chair. We are still within our parameters of 24% spending pattern for our budget. So the information is there, Chair. The cost reduction measures, because our goods and services budget has reduced, Chair, so we had to cut costs. This is in terms of, mostly in terms of traveling, because that's where we spend most of our money. So we had to have less meetings or use teleconference. Less people we send to meetings in Pretoria because the plane tickets are very expensive from Western Cape. We cannot drive to Pretoria, and we had our naturalization ceremonies. Our head office decided this year, Minister, that we'll have it provincially. That also saved cost. These are just the stakeholders, Chair. I'm showing you. I'm sure the members are aware of it, but we are participating with all of them. Slide 50 is as well. He's still stakeholders. Chair, so I'm going a bit faster. Now I'm going for immigration. Chair, this is the immigration component we have. Chair, it should actually be 47. I apologize for that because I see the first slide at 47, so this one should also be. I'm sorry about that, Chair. But there's 47 immigration officers we have. There's the level. We only have 4 assistant assistant director level. 32, Chair, are entry-level posts. So out of the 42, almost 80% are just foot soldiers. Only 10 are level 8, which is supervisors. And I just want to mention, we put the hospitality industry, Chair. We Googled from Westgrow, there's more than 10,000 places where people sleep in the Western Cape. More than 10,000. Now, with us, I don't know how many restaurants, we're still trying to figure out, but I'm sure there's more than 10,000 in the hospitality area of restaurants and cafes. Now, with a complement of 47 inspectorates, we will always struggle to deal with the employers, Chair, because that is our priority. So inspectorate for us is a priority, but I'll show you now what we are doing with our current capacity. This is our immigration stakeholders, Chair, and we are fully participating, all of them. Fortunately, with the 4 assistant directors, we can spread ourselves to be part of all these structures and clusters of government, the security clusters, the prof joins I attend, and some of the operational clusters, the crime summit, operation lockdown that's happening now in the Western Cape as well. These are all that we attend. Some of them are daily. The JOCS is a daily operational meeting, Chair, that we have to attend. These are more of the the immigration state. At the moment, they've been appointed as peace officers, but we are still undergoing the training. The priority committee of immigration is important because that is the committee that we lead as a department with all other security departments. Normally, the police lead, but the priority committee on immigration is led by Home Affairs, so we dictate where operations happen and how it should happen, Chair. So that's for us an important one. We have in Davos with the inspectorate unit, the ASDs have their own forum, Chair, like I have the EXCO. The ASDs also have immigration. They work together, and we have a coordinator. This is just our force we have, Chair. We do drills as well. I'm also somewhere there. My drilling is not so good as the others, but we have, fortunate to have some ex-military and some ex-SAPS officials, so they also help us with the drilling. This is some of the challenges when it comes to immigration. It's fraudulent, whether it's permits or visas or refugee documents or Form 20s. It's the Ruta and Bula case, Chair, is where you arrest illegal foreigners. When they get to court, they claim asylum. Then they are released. They just claim asylum. So all the work you do, once they appear in front of the magistrate and they meet the attorney, they will claim asylum. And so we have to include first before we can exclude, Chair. So that is one of the challenges, just one something that we have to work with. And then the MPA, the moving of dockets and withdrawing of cases, but I work closely with the MPA head here. We have regular meetings to make sure that when we have a case, an employer or a legal foreigner, that person must be taken through the court process and deported. We don't want withdrawals. So it's important that we provide the right information to the prosecutors as well so that they can prosecute. This is just some of the operations we had in August, Chair, and Powell, and in Atlantis we went to a shop there as well. This is the outreach programs. These are the fires that we had over the election period, before the election period. We have a coordinator. We had to appoint a dedicated coordinator for fires. So if a fire happens, we see in the newspaper, I give him a call and he coordinates the program. Fortunately, the DG is always willing. If I give the DG a call, he will say, go ahead, we'll do the paperwork afterwards. Because we know the urgency of providing these fire victims with a temporary ID or document so that they can access SASSA benefits. Okay. Just on some outreach programs, this was an interim case, LRB, a late registration of birth, where the informant was the grandmother, 103 years old. Chair, you find them in Friedendal, the farming areas. Still a problem with access to farms. Still a problem with farmers allowing those without IDs to come to Home Affairs. And we do not have a mobile unit to go to the farms at this stage. But she came to register her 31-year-old grandson because the mother passed away a long time ago. This is now APP targets, Chair, if we can go to the next slide, which is slide 60. I'm almost at the end, Chair. These are our APP targets now in terms of quarter one. This is how we achieved. We had 9 targets in quarter one. We achieved all 9 targets. We are on par to achieve all our targets this financial year. In terms of birth registration, Chair, for the last 3 years, there's our birth. Fortunately, through the hard work, let me not say fortunately, it was very hard work, Chair. For the last 3 years, since 2016, Western Cape has been achieving our birth target 100% for every financial year. And this quarter, first quarter of 2019-20, we're also on par. We're at 101%, so we're also on par still to achieve this year's birth target. This is just some of the strategies we implemented to ensure that we achieve the birth target. Chair, we more additional sources we deployed to the health facilities. We withdrew resources from back office. We put them to go and register babies. We used our learners to go to hospitals. An important one is we also use our secretaries and back office staff, Chair, because if a mother leaves on a weekend, they complete. We ask the health facility to keep a register with the contact details. So then we phone them to come back and say, it's the law to register within 30 days. If you do not come back, you have 20 days left or 15 days. So we constantly phone the mothers, and that actually resulted in us in achieving our target better, Chair. This is just a late registration of birth. Our numbers, for me, The unfortunate part, Chair, is that the highest number of late registration of birth over 1 year is in the Cape Town metro area, where we still have 15, 20, 30-year-olds walking in here and say, I don't have an ID. That's the saddest part, where accessibility is throughout the West, in the metro area. But that's the highest number of late registration births we have here. You can still understand the farming areas and the rural areas, but in the city, somebody comes from Menenberg, Chair, and says, I'm 28 years old, I was never registered. It still happens. Just shows the responsibility that we don't carry so fully as a population, Chair. This is a smart card. For the last 3 years, we achieved in 2016-17. In 2017-18, we did not achieve, Chair. We achieved 99%. We were short by 2,000 out of the 360,000. We were just short by 2,000. And last financial year, we overachieved by 138%, by 38%. This quarter, we're also on par to achieve the smart card for this financial year. If you look at the banks, Chair, the banks are performing at 68%. Because at the bank, you cannot dictate to clients that they must apply for a smart card. Most of the persons apply currently at the bank are passports. We already have smart cards. So that and you can also not, when a person walks in and apply for a smart card, you can't ask them to also apply for a passport. You can't say, why don't you also apply for your smart card at the same time, because they have to pay online before they apply. This is just a summary of the strategies, but I'm not going to talk about this because, and the challenges, it's the systems again and the high volumes as I spoke about. If we had these mobile units, we could go to where the high volumes are and alleviate the pressure. But as I said before, if we bring the additional three banks on par in the metro, we will also address that part. Chair, this is just some of the applications we lost because of downtime of the systems as indicated there. For last year, we lost 29,000, if you calculate it that way, because it's calculated at for every hour that the system is off, you lose about 15 applications per hour per FLO. This is the immigration targets, Chair, or just the performance in terms of, we just made a comparison instead of percentages of how we performed last year, 2018-19. What our 47 and how we're performing this year. So if you can look at employers charge, for example, last year was 16. This year, for this first quarter, we already did in the quarter last year 22. So all those figures indicate there that we have a better performance this quarter one as against last year quarters one in terms of deportations, transgressions passed, transfers to Ladela, as well as general inspections as well, Chair. Then this is the last slide. Sorry it took so long, Chair, but this is also a good slide for us. This is our payments within 30 days. As you can see, since 2016, we have achieved the target 100%. In 2017-18, we had 11 invoices that we did not, out of the 1,800, 11 we did not pay within 30 days. That was a 99% target. But this last financial year, we had again back at 100% performance. And for this quarter of this financial year, we are still out of the 353. We have also processed 353 invoices within 30 days, which gives us 100%. I thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you for your presentation. Western Cape, for the brief detailed report. I will invite honourable members to comment questions on the report, and the team will interface with the issues that members will be raising. Can I recognize hands for honourable Ross, honourable Lekuta? Is that the hand? Honourable Mpambo, and it'll be the last. Honourable Ross.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Mr. Simons, for the comprehensive presentation. I have a number of questions, so I'll just try and refer to the slides as well. The first question is in terms of management posts in an acting capacity. So why are there 7 of the 9 management posts in an acting capacity? And why are 2 DMO positions not funded? Then the second question is going to page 9. So we looked at footprint and access to clients. So the question over there, you talk about a provincial archive facility at Bellville. I take it those are physical documents. So what do you have in place there in terms of risk mitigation? If there's a fire and the building has to burn down, what happens? Then on page 13, we talk about Malmesbury and Mitchell's Plain. So the one thing I was unclear about was why has it taken 2 years to reopen? Is this a public works issue? If you can just give us a bit more information about that. And why was the department kicked out in the first place in 2017? Because my understanding is that people had to now go to Ceres or to Paul or to Atlantis, which is a significant travel distance away. Then in terms of Mitchell's Plain, so my question here, and I see DPW tendered a number of times, so it seems like the office was closed down due to occupational health and safety issues. So were those issues raised by yourself beforehand? If you could just give us an idea, did you raise the issues? What was the timeline of that? Because I'm taking it that this was a DPW leased building. So I just want to understand, when did the complaints begin? How long did it take? Because obviously then it put you in a very difficult position where the office was then closed down and there was no service over there. And then also, was there any action taken against the lessor in this regard? Then if we go to page 32, so there we just looked at the number of staff. So you've got 528 staff listed here. And then on page 35, you vetted 682. So how did that happen? I think I have to raise the concern about the comment on page 33 that we have the busiest office in the Western Cape that doesn't have an office manager now. So I don't know what the solution is, but clearly this is a serious problem. It's a serious risk in terms of this moratorium on hiring. And I don't know if the Minister has any comments in terms of what are the discussions in this regard, because if people in more senior positions leave and then you can't replace them, it really creates a crisis. So this to me is a big concern, this Barrack Street manager. Then page 34, so there we looked at progress in achieving equity targets. And I just want to understand, I see there's a provincial EAP and then the percentage representation. So I just want to understand why the coloured representation is so much under what the target is. I think the target is 49% and it's 35% in total. Then if we go to page 46, so I have to congratulate you for actually realizing that you have a budget and that you need to kind of try and stay within that budget, because the Western Cape is the only province where the compensation of employees is in line. So every other province is 105, 106% of expenditure. And then also your households. So every other province, it's about 600% over also on the household expenditure. So I'd like to congratulate you on actually keeping within your budget. But my question here is, with these proposed budget cuts in the next cycles, where are you going to make the cuts to make those sort of 5% and 6%? Then page 64. So I just want to understand there, the percentage of achievement went up, but the physical target was significantly down. So I just want to understand, if we look at page 64, your target for smart ID cards in 2017-18 was 362,000, and then in 2018-19 it went down to 279,000. So why did that target go down so much, even though you did indeed overperform even in the previous year, which is acknowledged? Okay, and then finally, I'd just like to understand what the revenue is. There's no revenue here, so I know in some of the other provinces there was a significant drop in revenue. So I just want to understand that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Honourable Kota.
I've got very short practical questions, really. There is an indication, you indicated somewhere along that you have been losing some staff, other than for the fact that there are budget cuts that government has introduced here and there and so on. What are the other elements that make for loss of staff? I think I should just leave that question like that. The second question I'd like to ask you is, you spoke about people that you arrest or you catch, maybe with trying to commit fraud and so on and so on, but that when they get to court, they claim asylum. You might want to, I'd like to hear what do the courts do about this, and what does the police, the NDPP, what do they do about that? Because it can't be that somebody who's looking for asylum can first start by committing a criminal act. Because once you committed a criminal act, we've got to take action against these people. And you might perhaps want to mention, the Western Cape is a border entrance thing, but people can come by ship and so on this side. But how many people come through into South Africa through the seaports, as opposed to people that enter the country in the northern parts of our borders and drift down and then come and ask for asylum here? I really would like to hear a few of those things, whatever you might share with us with regard to that. Thank you, Chair.
Naran Pamba.
Well, I will align myself with the last one on the ports, and I will not rehash it. I would like to hear the numbers as well. But, Minister, I would like you to speak more on CETA and the downtime that the department is obviously suffering from across the provinces. It's something that is consistent. Perhaps to the province, you maybe, if you can elaborate, or rather, in the other provinces, what I saw, which was different from your report. In fact, I must say, I think you spoke to your report more than most provinces that came, and it looked like you were more in charge about what is happening in your province. That is, at least as far as I captured you, there was even no need to sort of follow word for word, because, you know, it was jumping in. So I commend you there. But so I want to know, because one of the provinces, I think it was in Gauteng, if I'm not mistaken, where they were able to basically put down how many hours were lost in each office because of downtime. And in this case, I think that is what is missing. And I found that interesting, because then you're able to trace whether or not you are losing, you know, issuance because of downtime, or because of lack of staff. So we are able to then zoom in to the problem. And then we know that if we solve this, this then correlates or will give us this kind of outcome. I don't know if that makes sense, Minister. But I think we must be that pointed about issues and problems. So maybe what your report lacks, and it perhaps maybe is an overview, is that minute detail of speaking to the direct numbers. I'm not a fan of 101, late registration of birth. I'm not a fan of those kind of numbers. I'm a fan of you speaking to, you know, how, okay, I mean, of course, I think what, then how would you have determined your target? Are these all of the children who were born at this time, and are they all of, out of all of those children, let's say in Western Cape there were 30 births, did you then register all those 30 births through your, you know, tracking down from hospitals in your birth centers or in these health facilities? So I'm basically saying, at least explain that, because the issue of target sometimes is for me very tricky. So if you speak to that even more, I think that will give your report at least a bit of sense. So I'm saying, at least take us through what gives you your target, how do you arrive at the target, and how did you arrive at you achieving it or not achieving it. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's essentially what I'm trying to get specifically from you. On security, I don't think you spoke much on security in the offices, and it's one of the trends that we picked up was prevalent in most of the provinces that were presenting to us. In fact, one of the shocking ones, the minister was in Gauteng, where in the, they spoke openly. In Ekurhuleni, they say there was a burglary. About 34,000 was lost. And this is because most, in fact, I don't remember one province that reported that their offices were manned or guarded all 7 days of the week. In fact, the report was that the offices are manned and guarded only on weekdays. So from Monday till Friday. So Saturday, Sunday, it's open sesame for most offices in South Africa. And you know that this is a security issue. People's sensitive documents are then open, you know, for all sorts of mischief. Because you're dealing with human beings, some of the people that work for you may not have the interests of the nation at heart. So if they know that on such and such a day, that is not there. But also not only to speak of the people, or rather security guards, but also to speak of facilities like your cameras, your, what is it, what do you call the CCTV. Do you have such facilities, you know, guarding your offices, so as to give us a sense of, in your province, in this province of Western Cape, do we have the same problem? Is it a national problem, or is it just a problem confined only to the provinces that have already expressed that, like in Gauteng, for example? I think for now, I will bow the chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chanje.
Thank you very much, Chair. I have quite a list of questions, but maybe before that, just to make the point, at the expense of labeling the point, I think it's important to emphasize this point, so there's no confusion. Home Affairs is not a concurrent function or competency. It's not a provincial function. It's a national function. So provincial governments are clients and serviced. I'm making this point because I want to repeat it on the basis that it would have been wrong to allow province, I mean Home Affairs, based, because it's only your office in that province, for them to come here without, because the success and failure of all the 9 offices is a national success and failure. It's important to make that point. I want to emphasize that in case we can be confused. So let me leave that. The first, on page 9, just maybe to request that you, on the 27 connected health facilities, if one beyond this meeting can get a list of those facilities where they are. And I'm covered on the FNB port side because I was worried why you'd prioritize that, but I think there's a reason, the immigration issue, why you'd have prioritized that branch than other branches that I would have loved to be prioritized. Page 10, it's a conversation I think you'd need to have with the Eastern Cape, because as I sit here, I don't know who's number 3 population-wise. U6.7, Eastern Cape has lost 1.5 million through urbanization and those things. So are you number 4 or are you number 3? I mean, it might have helped me to help there, because that becomes important. The next page is on page 12.
the Vredenburg conduct point. There's no modernized office there, and I'm going to link with this point with other points, and this comes to the minister, because especially in the rural provinces, Limpopo, Eastern Cape, you know, this issue of the lack of modernized offices linked with your mobile trucks is a big problem. The last time I checked with the team, you're supposed to have received by December 2018 new kind of, and for as long as we don't do that, it slows down the production of your smart card. So I would like to get a comment from the minister on that. Then the next page, Chair, would be on page 18 and page 19. It's a page 18, just to confirm that in terms of the support for during elections, I can attest to that, because we interacted with you and we put you on the spot on these issues. So I do confirm that, as well as page 20. Just on page 21 to check, because this is a government institution, GCIS. Give us the status. How far are you with GCIS? If Voice of the Cape can help you and do things free, and you've got a government-owned institution like GCIS, and we're still negotiating just to for them to assist you with a clip over. What is the issue? Where is this matter hanging with GCIS? Page 25, the slide on Muetapile, Simon says, Ki Muetapile, Voorburg in Afrikaans. Just a summary, so your department in the Western Cape, in terms of the three categories, you are known for the following. So you smile very well, because that's in the 90s. Your offices, when I get there, people smile for me. That's what the record says. You smile very well in the 90s. In terms of professional conduct, it's between 60 and 70. But people leave less satisfied in your offices. It's here in your presentation, because it's between 47 and 68. So the critical part, which is the most important one, that one of serving and satisfying customers, is the lowest in terms of this. So you're good in smiling. Of course, you're good in appearing professional, but less so in the service. I'm putting that to you because it comes from your report. I'm not taking it anywhere else. Then you, which is very good, you gave us the examples of complete rating cards, and the very first one, the Belleville one, I was curious to understand how far are you on improving on that, because it raises serious question. And of course, you did not share, using these examples, your biggest and the busiest offices, which is your Cape Town Light office and the Khayelitsha offices. I would have been very much happy to see what they are saying about you and share with us those kind of examples. The next page, Chair, would be on page 33. Maybe to share the reasons, the 26 front office clerks. I'm just interested to find out whether you say inability to cope with demands for services within offices. So why are they leaving? You've lost 26 in terms of your report. Are they leaving because of pressure? Because they are certainly not leaving because of the budget cuts. They're already in the employment. So more reasons must be given to us. Why have you lost 26 office clerks? I want to stay on this page. What's my number now? But the slides, progress in achieving equity targets in June 2019. One, I'm interested, obviously, you might want to share that with us. I'm interested in the levels. You see, when you're saying 37% males, 63% is female. SMS, you have told us about 60%. You see where I'm interested in, because I don't want to be confused. What levels if you could break down the 63% of females. Are we talking here about the level 6, the entry point, which therefore gives us a picture as if women are better represented and yet they're at an entry point? And I want to take it so you can explain to me, because I'm not necessarily impressed about that. It could be possible that you've got quite a number of women who are sitting there doing all of the entry-level tasks. So I'm interested to understand that, because it has to give us better picture. But 63-37 might not be helpful. Just from where I'm sitting, I want you to disappoint me on that, because my gut feel is that it is that. We're not there in the middle management. You don't have these women. They're at entry point. Where's the ED, if you follow me? So I really want you to disappoint me and say, no, I'm wrong. Maybe to the colleagues are intimidating me here.
Can you jog a pantry? No, I'm the chair.
Thank you, chair.
You and Honorable Tanyile.
Thank you, chair.
I'm the chair.
Thank you, chair.
As you work towards your...
Okay, I am working towards, but just few others that I really need to check. You've answered me on page 43 about which finalized case, and you've indicated that there's dismissal, and I wanted to know what case of sexual harassment, which office, and then you have indicated that's Khayelitsha office, because in the presentation you did not, but in your verbal presentation you did. Chair, before, because I can see you're trying to rush me, but I need to go to the finances before I leave this. On the finances, or maybe firstly with the targets, chair. Let me start with slide 62. You say you have a problem with 29 level staff 5 members being against 29 connected health facilities, and I'm trying to understand why is that a problem. If you could explain, and then this is the one I want to, and I'm trying to skip now, on page 64. I see that you have a problem here, and I think Mr. Ross has highlighted that, and maybe let me not labor the point. But there's a bigger one that I have a problem with on slide 66. For the whole of 2018-2019, you have lost 29,000 in terms of applications. And ours lost was 2,920. Now, this is for the whole financial year. And the problem I have is that for quarter one, in 2019-2020, you have lost 13,000. If I were to do that in four quarters, it will take me to more than what you had in the whole year, and yet with that loss of application and loss of hours, you seem to be indicating that you are achieving your targets, and I'm not able to correlate the two things. So what made you to achieve those, and yet you have lost so many hours just in one quarter as compared to the old financial year of the previous year? So I wanted to go deep, but I don't want to irritate you, Chair, but I think there are quite a number of other things that I really wanted to dig into in relation to what is here. Let me pause there.
No, I was protecting you in the manner I'm going to protect the Honorable Kanyele. So you are not irritating the podium. I'm going to request, because we'll also invite second round, I'll request the Western Cape to lead, and the DG and the minister will come later. Thank you.
Thank you, Chen, and thank you, honourable members. Maybe just the first question, honourable member, you asked about 7 out of 9 is acting. On which slide is that again? Because, Chair, we don't have, there's only one acting manager, is the one for Barrack Street. The other ones are all appointed. All our officers have appointed managers. In terms of the DMOs, we have 6 districts, and we have 3 district managers. So the principle the department has worked on is that for every 2 districts, you have 1 manager managing 2 districts. So in terms of that, we are fully, all the positions are fully occupied. We have unfunded posts of DMOs, but the district managers of operations, each one manages 2 districts. And the maximum officers they have is 11 per 1 person. If we had 6 districts, you'd have 1 district manager of operations, for example, in Central Karoo, only managing 3 small offices, which would be a very small job to do. So it's better for us if we share the workload we have amongst the 3. But on manager level, we only have the 1 vacancy, which is Barrack Street. The next item on the footprint, the archiving in Balvo. When we created the archiving facility, we have a directorate called archiving in our head office. So they met with the public works and the landlord. So the archiving facility in Balville is on the top floor. It's got a particular epoxy coating flooring, the fire extinguishers. All of that has been created to mitigate the risk of fires there. So it's not just an open room that we're using to store documents. It was particularly designed and developed for that particular purpose. So I also encourage members, if you're in Balville, it's not far. At one point, if you want to go view the archiving facility, we have a sorting room, we have a supervisor's office, and then for every district, we have a huge space where they, and filing, the filing racks are already there, and it's steel filing racks to also mitigate the fires. So all of that is there in the archiving facility in Balville. Then on the Mamasbury, why did it take 2 years? Chair and members, we were evicted basically. We offered the landlord a 3-year lease extension. It's one of the, let me say, a bad landlord. You must call them that. Mitchell's Plain is the same. I'll come to Mitchell's Plain now. Over the years, the toilets were bad. Didn't want to spend money to refurbish in terms of what his responsibilities were. But because we couldn't find accommodation in Mamasbury town, it's very difficult to get accommodation for the square meters that we require. So the landlord decided he does not want the government department in his building anymore. He then wanted a furniture shop. So we offered him the extension of the lease. He preferred to go to the court and gave us an eviction order of 2 months. We had to pack up and leave Mamasbury office basically overnight. 2 months is nothing to vacate the building. We went to the magistrate in Mamasbury to say, give us space in the Tusong Center, because we know Home Affairs is essential service for that town of Mamasbury. They were not prepared. They put us on the rugby field, you know where we are now, on a rugby field chair in Mamasbury with a mobile truck. The only one, it's not modernized, it can only issue birth certificates and death certificates. We then took the Mamasbury staff and we deployed them to Powell office. We deployed them to Atlantis. So they've been sitting there for 2 years. We went out on tender. First tender came, there was a technicality. The second one, there was a legal challenge. And because the service providers had some did not comply with the requirements and was taking it to court. And now the last tender went out. The funny thing is that almost the same 4 or 5 service providers tendered every time. Because if you know Mamasbury, the town is so small, you just do not find space. But eventually we found an old campus building, it's close to the Kentucky, and also the building is not conducive because it's not one building, it's got 2 buildings next to one another. But it's instead of going out for another tender, we then had to decide, it actually worked for us in hindsight, because the one building will now only be for applications. And the other building just next to it, just not even a distance, it's maybe 5 meters apart, will be for applications. Now it helps us greatly then that we can split our queues. People can apply there and go and collect at some other spot. So we'll have different counters, so it works out better for us in the end. But it was very frustrating because we were, and I had to go through so many times to the media to say it's not Home Affairs that did not want to provide a service. We were kicked out, and the magistrate in Mamasbury did not want to assist us with the service for that community. But thankfully, that's past of us. We're moving in coming now. The building will be handed over to us at the end of September, and then we'll do the refurbishment, the connectivity part, and then we'll start in November. Then Mitchell's Plain was also, we've been in that building. I arrived in 2009 in Western Cape. We've been in that building probably 10 years before that. The landlord does not, for the last year we've been asking him to fix. There was the problems with the emergency door, there's cockroaches in the building, the carpets were, the tiles were broken, the air cons didn't work. He did not want to spend a cent because he knew we were on tender. And he knew we were on a month-to-month public works rental. So he was not going to spend any money to fix it. When the Department of Labor came and said, no, the conditions are bad, we're closing you. It happened on a Thursday. I know on the Tuesday we opened again because we then brought our own, the department brought our own service providers. We fixed it over the weekend. Public Works gave the landlord the bill. And he's taking the money from the rental that they were going to pay him for fixing the building. So we fixed it ourselves at his cost. That's what we did. But as I said, we are now again on the reviewing buildings in Mitchell's Plain area at the moment. Then vetted versus staff we have. The staff, the 528, includes our staff in the Western Cape. It doesn't include the airport and the harbour and the refugee centre because they do not report, they're not part of our establishment. But for support services in Western Cape, it's performed by the provincial office. So our vetting office, our counter-corruption, our HR also assist the airport, the harbour, and the refugee centre with vetting. So the extended numbers are the vetting of the airport officials. The difference is the vetting that's conducted for the airport and the harbour is just included there as one. But as indicated by the Honourable Member, I think I picked up from Honourable Member Janke as well, is that it's difficult to come here. 69 pages to give the details and the breakdown is something that we have it available. Of all those issues, we'll send it to the Secretary so that you can see, for example, if you indicated security, which offices have security, and which is a security company, is it 8 hours a week, who does after hours, who works on a Sunday, who works on a Saturday, is there night duty, is it day duty only, and in some offices we don't have night duty but we have alarm systems with armed response, but there's no physical security there. So there's no one security what is it, in place for all of us, not the same. It depends on where you're situated, the volumes, the size of your office. That's how the security company and the number of staff is allocated. But I get the point about the actual breakdown of the detail. I've made the notes. The team is here also. They've been nodding and sending me notes also to say that we have the information. If you give us by Friday, we can share with your permission the detailed that we can give to the members as well. You said the question that I just responded, so it's the staff of the vetting. The busiest office in Western Cape, the office head there, and maybe this comes also to the reason why staff are leaving, it's different reasons. The head of the office in Barrackstraat left a year ago. His name is Mr. Mogheli, a very good manager. He left for personal reasons because he wanted to, he had small kids, and he wanted to, but between him and his wife, he wanted to be looking after the kids while the wife is a person who has a professional job, so she couldn't be at home. So he decided that, but part of the reason is also that because of the ceiling on COE budget, the upward mobility is affected and the morale of the staff is affected. So many of the level sixes are also looking for other opportunities, or saying, so staff come to me and say, we've been on this level for 8 years or 10 years. I'm rather going to go to the private sector or look for a job somewhere else. And it's always the good people that you lose, sadly so. But there's various reasons. Some are dismissed as well, I must say that. Some resign because that we just had a person resigning because he wanted to go to the private sector and open his own business. We have these different scenarios, but we can also, in terms of this, indicate exactly the 31 that's resigned and what was the reason that they gave in the exit reports. What is the reason why they resigned? Why is color so underrepresented? Honorable members, when we advertise the post, we always say the qualifications needs to be there and the interview. So the recruitment process, while we do give preference to disability and human, the other recruitment processes really just takes the course of who's the best candidate in terms of that. So I can't really say why is it so under. We're trying to get the best persons that in terms of the advert that goes out there. I know at one point we blocked for every office. We said these posts are earmarked for disabled persons. That's why at one stage we had almost 4% disability in the Western Cape, because we just said you can't just say that you don't have a disabled person. There are many disabled persons. The Labour Department then gave us a list, and so what qualifications and experience? So that is a difficult question, but through the recruitment process, we really don't target that. There is some guidance we get from our head office, so we focus on that. When it comes to cut the budget, it's difficult. Probably the food will go. Already we are just food at sometimes, we always, some finger lunch. If, for example, if we know some of our colleagues are traveling from far. But if it's a meeting where we are just, yeah, the EXCO meetings never has entertainment budget because we're all local, so we don't, that's the one that will go. We can look still at traveling costs. I know the DJs, as in the meetings, always tell us that we have video conferencing. We should not jump on the plane every time there's a meeting. We must use video conferencing further. So for us, that's a huge cost driver. It's the flying to Pretoria. It's not only the plane, it's the accommodation, it takes you longer to get there and you come later back. So there, and our finance director is here, she's very stingy, I can tell you, we as well, we look at this and where do we cut costs. So that's something that we will just have to find. Once we get a budget, you must just make do, and that's what we know we have to do. Percentage of achievement went up, but the target went down. What happened that time, Honorable Chair, is the previous year there was a branch decision that targets must be based on performance, baseline basically. So that year there was those who argued against it and those who argued for it. I was against it because if you work hard this year, that's going to be your target, which means you must work hard. And if you didn't achieve your target this year, you get a lower target. But that happened that year, so our target was based on our performance, very high. It was KZN, Gauteng, and Western Cape, and Limpopo's target was increased. And we signed agreement with the DDG to say that, give us more resources because our target has jumped up. So that's also the year that we struggled. You will see we didn't achieve because the target went up. And then the following year we decided, let's not penalize those who perform. Let's base the target on, not baseline, but let's work out the target that they work in terms of if number of FLOs is number of counters. So if you have 6 FLOs or counters, they work the target on 28 times the number of counters and you work it out that way, which is then a measurement that is the same for every province instead of based on performance. That's why the targets and achievement for that year is, fortunately this year and going forward, I'm sure it won't differ like that. Same with the birth target as well. Previously it was based on performance and baseline, now it's based on birth occurrence. So if there's in your province 100,000 babies born, you get 90%, that is your target across the provinces. So we worked out the target in terms of that now for smart card as well as birth. The revenue, our director of finance will indicate to me that. Do you have it, Rory? Okay, here's the revenue. Just put on. For 2018-19, our revenue in Western Cape was 84,343,328. So it's roughly 84 million in 2018-19. The first quarter of 2019-20 was 40, up to currently, which is 6 months, end of year, it's 42 million. That's the revenue in Western Cape. The next page. I think, did I conclude all your questions, Honourable Member? No. Yes. Then, Honourable Akota, I think I spoke about the reason for the loss of staff for different reasons, as opportunities and some dismissals as well. What do the courts do if somebody claims asylum? If there's a criminal, if you have been apprehended by police for a criminal activity and you claim asylum in court, they will still all keep you in custody. They will still detain you, but detain you in a safe place, in, for example, Portsmouth or wherever. It's only if there's no criminal offences against you and you claim asylum. The law, the Refugee Act, allows that you must be given opportunity to finalize, submit and finalize your asylum case first. There was a court judgment, the Bula Ruta case, that if a person claims asylum, they will have to be given that opportunity. Richard can also add.
Thanks, Mr. Simon. I think on one issue of submitting reports, Minister, your officials pronounce like that always. There's a case we're sitting with of Desmond Tutu on our oversight. We found an official playing on the phone, and we have since requested investigation, action, and the report to that effect. And today the report has not been submitted to the portfolio committee. Now what we're going to do is that your submission, you're now elevating it to the minister.
Yes.
The minister that must submit all the requests that have been brought by the honorable members, including the Desmond Tutu matter, Minister. Did you, Minister? I thought you were moving to the DG and the minister. That's why I'm just questioning on this one matter.
Okay.
You can continue.
But I know, Chair, we will. Okay. The one on how many asylum seekers, etc., moved to reports, Richard will answer that from immigration, the acting DDG of immigration. The downtime minister, I think, will answer on that. The number of hours lost in each office, again, that's one of the reports we have it here. It's one of the reports we'll submit through the minister as well, Chair, as you've requested, by Friday, if that's in order with yourself. It's just we gave the summary of the number of hours lost through downtimes. To get to the summary, you have to have it per office. So we'll give you the detail of per office that is linked to the summary. As the question is asked, yes, Honourable Member, that is the minute detail that you requested. Then security of the officers, I think I've also responded. Maybe I just add, we do not have CCTV or metal detectors in our offices, Honourable Member. But we have alarm systems in some offices where we do not have, as I indicated before, security guards after hours.
Can I move to the DG and the minister? Will be the first one for follow-up. Okay. Thank you.
So, if I understood the question correctly,
sorry. Are you not finished?
No, I'm
not. Oh, no. I thought you were finished because you are interrupted, and I think when you close the book, you are done. Can you just complete and then give other members to respond?
Thanks. The last page share of questions from Honorable Janky. It's the page 9, the level 5s. You want a list of the connected hospitals also. We'll give that one. The hospitals connected. And then the population stats that you're saying, this stat, as the footnote indicates, we got it from a source there to say what one. Friedenberg, not modernized, but it will be modernized now in the fourth quarter as it indicated. And you've asked the minister about the mobile units. Then GCIS, I've met with the head of GCIS Western Cape. We have sent them the voice clips as well. We are waiting. They have indicated to us there's many community radio stations that they work with and they have contacts with that they want to air our video clips and that on a chip. But up to now, they have not come back. I've met with the one of the assistant heads there about a week or two ago again to follow up on this, but we still have not had them airing it for us yet. On the summary list, Saturday, I note your question as well. Yes, different weeks is different. That's probably the biggest thing is consistency. It's difficult to smile the whole day. I work at the front counter chair. I smile in the morning. By 10 o'clock, I'm tired. And I just do it once when I do cold face. To be a FOC, you must do it your whole life, every day, morning and night. And when it gets to 4 o'clock, chair, when you want to go home because your taxi is waiting, the husband, you must go to class. There's some clients still in the office, and you can't leave until you finish them all, chair. So it's very difficult. We try to assess it, but you can't be too harsh as well. You can try and always remind staff the clients, importance of clients, etc. This tool at least gives us an indication of which offices are where clients are less satisfied. And it's mostly in the metro because of the waiting times. They will get the service completed, but they will still remember the 3 hours that they stood in the queue. Belleville Rating and Khayelitsha, we will see regards for Cape Town and Khayelitsha as well. It's another point, Eddie, that we will, the rating cards for Cape Town and Khayelitsha that you are looking for. Why staff are leaving, I think I responded to that. The levels of equity, I have them here, Chair. For females' equity, the level 3s is 11, level 5s is 12, level 6 is 211, that is level 6 is a FOC, and so the majority is FOC level, and then 62 is level 7, which is supervisor, 24, which is level 8, which is a higher supervisor, middle manager, is 24 of them. There are 10 assistant directors, so that's more than 50% middle managers are female in the Western Cape, office heads. These are not office heads that I'm talking about. Of the level 12, there are 3, and we are 6 level 12, there are 3 of them are female. On the director level, there is we have 3, and we have 4, 3 of them are females, and 1 is a male. So we are still, if I look at this, except on level 6, on the supervisory level upwards, we are better represented. Then the level 9s, level 5s, why are there only 9? And what's the problem? There's 26, 29 connected health facilities. So you would want a permanent level 5 because that's the job description is to register births full-time. So you'd want 29. At the moment, we only have 9. So we're using level 6s from the front line at the counters to work at the health facilities. And some of them do 2 or 3 health facilities a day because you can't sit in a health facility the whole day and only 10 babies are born or 5. So they would go in the morning to one health facility and then in the afternoon and late afternoon to the other one. But these times are all scheduled. So the hospitals know, they inform the mothers as well that Home Affairs will be here between 12 and 2. So we do it sort of on a rotation basis instead of just sitting whole day at one health facility while you can be productive at others as well. And then the last question, why more offline? I think what we're trying to say is that if we are not offline, we can take in more applications, and it's better for our reputation as a department, less complaints, because when it's offline, it's difficult to explain to the clients you're offline, because they become angry, etc. You will explain there's a problem with the system, etc. But it still, for us, could these applications lost could have meant we've had overachieved the target by far. That is but it's not only the targets that's important, it's the client service satisfaction. Because once the system is off, the staff is frustrated because you look at clients, they look at you, the managers don't know what to say. So it's just a bigger problem than just the targets that the system causes. Thank you very much, Chair. I'm done.
Are you done?
Yes.
Okay. Behind you, DJ.
I'll be quick with my answer. I won't take up his time, Chairperson. The volumes that go through our Cape Town port, the maritime port, is obviously relatively low if you compare it to volumes that go through the other ports. So just quickly, I drew some comparison stats. For 2018, if you just through the Cape Town harbour, there were 77,678 persons that were processed through the Cape Town maritime port. To give you a comparison, the airport in Cape Town processed 2,620,757 passengers. So I know it's two different things, but it just gives you a sort of comparison in terms of quantum, of movements. The maritime port is essentially comprised up of two characteristics in terms of persons that get processed. There's the crew members, which will be processed on a continual basis throughout the year, and then there's your seasonal cruise ships, which come and go. So just quickly looking back at the stats again, as an example, you'll see a spike in January 2018 where they processed 20,665. Again, there was another spike back about 10,736 in April. And the rest of it all ranges sort of between 2,000, 3,000 as you go for the rest of the year from there. Maybe down towards October, there's a bit of a rise again, but it's not that much. I don't see a comparison between what's coming through the port and what we find at our asylum seeker refugee reception center. You'll know that our office in Cape Town has been closed for some time. We were recently compelled through the courts to reopen it. Since it was reopened, I also just quickly went back to our midterm report from January to June for the asylum seeker management, and we've had only 197 asylum cases that have been registered at this office. So it's very low numbers. The rest of the persons which are processed through the office are extensions of persons which have already been in the system. So I can't actually see a comparison between the harbours and the asylum seeker office. I hope I've answered the honourable member's question.
Did you?
Yes, and Chair, just to add on what Richard has just said, that we don't have incidences of people coming by sea to claim asylum. Majority of the people come through the northern borders. That is why our contention, even when we went to court on the issue of Cape Town Refugee Reception Center, was that actually these centers must not be here, because we then allow a person to travel, to transit from the northern borders into Cape Town to claim, asylum. So that is the issue that we were contending even in court papers, but obviously the court ruled against the department in that regard. Chair, let me just deal with the two issues. The issue of security in our offices is that we used to operate from Monday to Saturday, that is in the front offices. So therefore the arrangement was that the offices will have physical security on Monday to Saturday. And obviously Sunday we were using alarm systems and everything to lock the offices, mainly also because of the budgetary constraints. Obviously now we no longer work on Saturday since that withdrawal in the bargaining chamber, the working hours. So we are still trying to fix that issue, because we do want to operate actually 7 days a week in order for us to help our people. But secondly, we were considering, you know, that all officers must have CCTV and alarm system so that we can be able at least to have a security response if there are burglaries. We do experience a lot of burglaries in Gauteng in particular. Also recently in Limpopo, there's one officer that was burglared. On the mobile units, Chairperson, this is a very, very painful situation, because when we decommissioned the old generation trucks, it was precisely because they were not in the position to give people smart cars. They were still using the old legacy system. We bought the new trucks, different sizes and shapes, Kumbis, Bigfords, and we customized them for our business. The only part that was left was connectivity. And unfortunately, because connectivity in terms of the CETA Act, it's a mandatory services that you need to get from CETA. At some point, we tried to deviate, to do it on our own. Obviously, we would have probably been sitting with a qualification or an irregular expenditure on that. So we had to get CETA to get a service provider for us. It is recently that now they've concluded with MTN, that the MTN is busy now with the connectivity of those particular trucks. They're also doing the hospitals, they're doing the ports of entry. But I must say that also, in as much as that connectivity is going to be concluded with all the trucks that we bought with MTN, it does indicate that the coverage of such a network is not easily available in all the other areas. You probably needed to have more than one service provider so that if this in this area, MTN is stronger, then you can connect it using MTN. If it's not, then you can use another mobile what we call a service provider. So we are going to pursue, obviously, some of the additional what we call networks for us to be able to connect those trucks. But definitely they're going to come alive very soon. Thanks. We had bought, I'll just have to confirm, but it's over 30. It's 41. Yes, we've bought about the new generation one was about 41 trucks, and then the old one that we refurbished was 59. So you're going to be sitting with about 100 trucks when we are ready, and we'll then send them out to provinces. So when you look at the numbers, we'll ensure that at least at a minimum, the province has no less than 8 trucks per province to be able to go to far-flung areas, particularly in the areas of like Northern Cape where the office spread is not there. They can just go on a scheduled basis and then, you know, take applications and then go back to issue that. Thanks very much.
Minister.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. Yeah, the issue of staffing is what we are engaging with Treasury incessantly, because the problem is that they do a ceiling about the amount. They just said Home Affairs in the whole country, you can't spend more than $3 billion on compensation of employees. And if you are at $3 billion, one more person you hire, you have now exceeded Treasury targets, and that's the problem, because we are showing them that's very mechanical. Very recently, a circular came out that we could look at the vacancies, which are very strategic, and try to fill them. But that's where we are at the present moment. We will try our best to fill the strategic post, but this is the problem that has been imposed upon us. Honorable Lekota, we are going to have to sit down as a country and do introspection. The question of a very serious introspection. And some people might believe we are moving backwards. But with the recent examples of what we have had, we have to do introspection. I'm sure you are aware that after 1994, we went all out to be a model country and did things which nobody else in the world is doing, and not aware that reality in life is not like that. There's a lot of abuse of our systems. Just to give you an example, 2 weeks ago, unfortunately, because of the bereavement, I couldn't come, but the DM was there. There was a conference here in Cape Town of international jurists on migration. That means it was judges all over the world who deal with migration issues. One of their complaints was South Africa, that we are making judgments that are impacting negatively on them because they are being quoted by international NGOs as benchmarks. I mean, like this particular one of non-refoulement.
there are three judgments which the court has made that are causing problems now in the country. But they will make it in terms of what they believe our constitutional, is. Number one, when people come here for asylum, they are given a Section 22 permit. The Section 22 permit gives you 3 to 6 months to be in the country looking for refugee status. Yes. Now, during those 6 months, that permit says you are legal, even if you enter the country illegally. Yes, you enter the country illegally, but now you've got a permit. You can do anything. Now, we can't accommodate those people like in Lindela. We can't give them food. So one of them went to court, and the judgment is that he deserves a job. He must be allowed to work, even though he's not yet been given any status in the country. And that's a judgment. And many employers, when they stop hiring South Africans, they make use of that and say, no, I'm hiring this person. The judge said we can hire them. But they avoid hiring South Africans deliberately. I mean, I've seen that with the truck drivers in Durban, very deliberately. So that's the first judgment. The second one, which was also made, was it because of something happening in Limpopo? Business. That is allowed to open a business, even though he's not yet legalized in the country. That's the second judgment which has been made. What was the third one? DG, can you remind me? Yes. The
first one was the Chinooka case.
Yes.
And the second one was the Bula case.
No, no, not the names of the cases, because what exactly the judgment is all about. I'll mention the one about doing well. Oh, yes. That even if you came illegally and your Section 22 notice expires, it must be automatically renewed. Yes, it must be extended. You can't be arrested. In other words, you still say, now, these things are causing problems, and international jury said, we don't have these things in our countries. But if you rule like that in South Africa, we are going to be affected. Can you, now, if it is judges who complain, you can imagine the form of trouble in which we are. Mm-hmm. Now, we are also using what in law they call a very difficult concept called non-refoulement, which we are told is international law, that you may not take a person back from the country where they came from, if they are claiming refugee status. You can't do that. Now remember, whether we like it or not, the people who are coming here, 95% are people who are looking for jobs. Let's be honest about it. I saw yesterday how Morning Life were harassing our officials at Desmond Tutu about corruption and all that. That we are not efficient, we don't give, we are not friendly to those people, we don't give them what they want. The fact remains we are faced with 95% at Desmond Tutu Center of people who are looking for jobs, when our own people are unemployed. So it doesn't mean that once you arrive there, you are going to get the documents we need. And because they are looking for jobs, they don't, maybe let me put it this way, Honorable Lukot. The 1951 United Nations Convention on Refugees, upon which our Act of 1998 is based, is very unambiguous who qualify for refugee status. There must be war in your country. Tell me where there is war in the continent, or in Pakistan and Bangladesh and tell me where there's war. Even in DRC, the war is in one region. One corner is the whole, but it says there must be war. Number two, you must be persecuted for political reasons, for religious reasons, for cultural and traditional beliefs, and for gender. It says so. Now, the issue of gender, I know all over Africa, the leaders talk very carelessly about them, but there are very few areas where there are actual persecutions. For instance, in Kenya, they passed an anti-gay act, but they don't apply it. But people come here and say, no, because there's that act, I was running away. But the act says you must give a proof. So most of the people who come to our reception centers, the five of them, whether it's Cape Town, Desmond Tutu, Marabastad,
P.E., Durban and Mosina, they cannot prove what this act does. But the courts looked at them as people who have run away, whose lives are in danger. I've just heard of Zimbabwe, and I'm not going to mention the name because it's very high-powered, who phoned a very senior leader here and say, we're not giving the passport because he wants to go to Barry Mugabe. And something happened with the passport. There's a reception center. He said, no, there's no problem. Go to our embassy. They'll give you a temporary travel document. We've got no promise about that. He then said, no, I'm not going. I'm going to be persecuted if I go to Zimbabwe. I don't believe it. I know there's trouble there, but that people are really being persecuted willy-nilly. I don't think that is true. But that is what, unfortunately, we are going through, and we've got to look there. Other issues, because it might not have been a question, but I want members here to understand. We've got a whole slew of appeals. When you arrive there, the officers who interview you, refugee status, they are trained officers, very well trained. And I've invited members to go there. I want you to see so that you don't read what is in the press. Because Morning Life went there and stayed outside in the pavement and start harassing us about corruption, that we have got no cameras. We have got cameras inside. We can't put cameras in the streets where they cheat each other. And we know there's a lot of cheating there. And who's doing it? There are many people who say, I'm agent, Honorable Gold. I said, look, you want to get your asylum quick, just give me 500 rand, I'll fix it for you. Many of them are not Home Affairs officials, they call themselves agents. And they cheat. Those agents are thugs most of the time, because they take people's money. And then, once they give you fraudulent documents, this person seeking for refuge goes to stand in front of a judge and cry and says, no, I was cheated by an agent, it's not me who cheated, and please forgive me. But it's not true. The agent told you, I'm going to serve you, give me so much money, I'll give you this. And when it tends to be fraudulent, they go and cry. So those are the issues we are having. Now, once you appear in front of this official who then says, no, you don't qualify, then you appeal to a committee called SCRA, the Standing Committee on Refugee Affairs. It's not the Standing Committee of Parliament. It's appointed by the minister. You appeal to it. Then there's another appeal committee. You know, it's an appeal committee on... Refugee Appeal Committee. Then you can still go to a magistrate. And if you are not satisfied, you go to the High Court. By the time they arrive in High Court, they can see the red light. Then they put Plan B, get married to a South African. Yes, so Plan B, while you are waiting to appear in court, you get married to a South African. That whole process of appealing to SCRA, Refugee Appeal Committee, it falls off. Because now you've got a partner here. And even more ominously, the court says when we make a ruling, we must make it in favor of children. They just impregnate and say, I've got a child here, I'm not leaving. No, that's what you are going through, honorable members. No, there's this child here, I'm no longer leaving. You know, I'm sure you are aware, I'm not exaggerating, because we have got now, from last year, just in one financial year, 632 marriages, which are said to be fraudulent, but they are not fraudulent. People got married for this type of thing, transactions, and thereafter they want to cancel the marriage. When we refuse, they go to, like this group that went to Vets Legal Aid Clinic and started crying, Home Affairs officials are marrying us left, right, and center is wrong. The 632, we found that were married legally. They just believe it's time to terminate the marriage now. They don't know that once you marry legally that way, enough to terminate it is a divorce. You must go to court. And you need money and a lawyer, and they don't have it. So we need to sit back and look at our legal regime. Is there any way in which we can change some of these things? Because now they are being used against the country, and we are being viewed as xenophobic, when actually Minister Pando was saying we haven't done some of the worst things that our colleagues in the continent have done to these people. but we are the ones who are looked upon by the whole world as the most evil country. The last thing, the DG this morning, I didn't see, people phoned me, they were very happy. He was saying, how can we be said to be xenophobic when we've got more Basotho than Lesotho itself? We've got more Botswana than Botswana itself. We've got the biggest concentration of Indians out of India. There's no other country that has got many people who come from India than we have got in South Africa. Yes, and you go over to Eastern, to Hazyview area where I've been. We've got lots and lots of people there who have, are from Mozambique. And we are about to naturalize them because they won't go back. So the story that we are really xenophobic by chasing people away, it doesn't work. It's the hardships which people are going through every day. Now, the last example I want to give, I was in Lesotho. I was at Maseru border post. I saw it with my own eyes. Children there literally attend school in Lady Brand from Maseru. And every day, and they even ask us, could you keep on putting a stamp on the passport? That kid will need 50 passports, you know. So we have allowed them, they go there through the border without us stamping anything. Because these are learners who must go to school. And we're not strict. It's not only them, we have got public servants in Lesotho who are working for the Lesotho government in Maseru. But they are staying in Lady Brand because that's where they wanted to have houses. We are not rejecting those. So this xenophobia thing is just an unfortunate problem in which we put ourselves by making our laws in such a way that they will be misused. So that's why they tell you about this person who's arrested and appear in court and start crying refugee status when actually the person has committed a crime. Sita, I think the DG has answered. But there's another issue I want to respond to. Last week, all Home Affairs officials in the country, on the 9th and the 10th, Home Affairs officials were down, all of them, for 2 days. It has got nothing to do with CETA or our systems. It's something which can make you angry, and I want members to start understanding when we take action. It's because most of these offices are owned by Public Works. They are the ones who pay electricity. So it so happened that in Pretoria, not in the whole country, in Tshwane, where we have got the heart of Home Affairs is a building called BVR, which if you apply for an ID or passport or what, you won't get it until that office clears it. Doesn't matter in which part of the country you are. Once you apply, before the government printing works prints it, they must clear it. That we have checked everything, everything is normal and all that. So when that office collapses, everything collapses in the country. And how did it collapse? There was a squabble between Tshwane Municipality and Public Works about electricity bill, the account, the invoice. They say no, they want, they say we must pay 36 million and you don't believe it. And they refuse to pay and everything collapses. What am I trying to run to? Because that is it's a national key point. The building is classified as a national key point, but Public Works says no, we're not going to pay it because Tshwane Municipality wants 36 million. Why not pay 36 million and debate later because it's a key point? That's the point I'm making. Now when I tell them that we're going to take that function, it's as if we are fighting another government department. Because if it was us paying for electricity, we would have paid. Because we know the consequence of refusing to pay 36 million to the whole country where for 48 hours, the whole government department is not functioning. But Public Works never saw anything wrong. They said, no, we can't pay. The Auditor General is going to check us and all that. So these are some of the issues that we need to resolve, which we experience all the time. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll invite the last hands if members want to comment questions. Can I recognize? Honorable. will wait for the request from Honorable Kota, but you can continue with your...
Thanks, Chairperson. Honorable Pambo was going to ask the question about the security, but not on the Johannesburg or the Limpopo side, on the side of the Western Cape. On how many burglars did they have on the and how did they, how much did they lost in terms of those burglars, those yes, those burglaries. Thank you.
Honorless. Thank you, Chair. I'll be brief. Yes, thank you for the feedback about the mobile units. I'd just like to understand what kind of timelines we're looking at. Because if you look at the offices, 415 offices, you're talking about 135,000 citizens per office. And especially, you know, if you look at Northern Cape and things like that, there's a desperate need for these things. So what are the timelines for that? In the last meeting we had, there was a case of Rwanda that was raised, where they had mobile units out of suitcases, and they managed to do tens of millions of smart card ID issues. I think it was within a one-year period. I'd also just like to understand, are you looking at that? Have you looked at that as a possible solution, as opposed to a big truck, which is probably very costly? And then just finally a comment. I think, Minister, you've raised it already. I think it's a big concern to myself, and a number of questions have been raised over the last few meetings about these leases with public works, and especially the number of leases that are allowed to go to a month-to-month, because what is happening is once it goes to month-to-month, the tenant or the lessor, they've got no motivation to fix things because next month the department could cancel. And also a number of the provinces have raised this issue of why do we not build? Why are we leasing all the time? Especially in a climate where any sort of building contracts, especially in more far-flung areas, would be most welcome. Thank you.
No, thank you, Chair. Mine is quick. I think the Minister has already touched on it, because I was going to ask the issue about inconsistent judgments from the report of the Western Cape, which have been presented to Advocate de Kock. But I think, listening to the Minister, I think you've really attended to that issue. I only have a suggestion to make, because the issues that you are raising do require a coordinated approach between Home Affairs, the Justice Department, the police, and the various other actors. And therefore, for me, the issue is what is being done about that. Is there an intention to concretely have, especially given the recent developments, a stepped-up approach, which ourselves as Parliament we can do as part of our oversight, to have one session where we have all of these kind of ministries responding? But that's the only way you're going to deal with it, not in a silo way. We're in one room, Home Affairs with other stakeholders who are dealing with these issues, because they affect us more. So the justice tells us what they're doing around some of these inconsistent judgments and so on. So that's the only suggestion I want to make, that it could happen both at an executive but also at this level, for us to see how we cap that particular issue. Thank you, Chair.
Last one on Mike.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a suggestion to the department. I think from what the Minister has just said, we need to amend legislation in order to solve this problem. Otherwise, it will never be solved. We will get this judgment and that judgment and that judgment using the legislation that exists. I would suggest that the department goes back, look at the legislation that is in force now, and identify where it gives us problems, and suggest amendments to that legislation, which they will bring here and we deal with. because this problem needs head on. There's no way in which we can sort it out except if we deal with it head on. We would like to be good people, but it doesn't work out, either for us or for the country or for Africa itself. As jurists already complain about legislation that we have. So I'm not sure whether we must, in order to solve this problem, we give the department a time frame to go and identify all of those things, bring them here, we check the amendments that we need to do, and let us be bad people if that needs to be. Otherwise, we will keep on sitting here, getting worried, and we know where the problem lies. I would suggest that we do that. Otherwise, there's absolutely nothing we are going to do sitting here all the time. We are not going to solve anything. Thank you, Chairperson.
We're going to try to collectively solve problems of the department and complement where there are weaknesses. I think that should be the feature spirit on how we conference with the documents of the committees. I'll give the minister, I'm not sure how we're going to do summary in terms of the mostly comments which are arising from honorable members. Who's going to lead the thinking?
The last two is Honorable Janji and Honorable Magi. The others are technical. Question from Honorable Bambo, and the suitcase the DG will answer, then I'll summarize the last two questions.
Thank you. Yes. Mr. Thomas?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Member. If I could just get an indication from Honorable Member Bambo, what period of break-ins, you know, for what period break-ins or security breaches in our officers' burglaries, for what period it was. But the most recent one, we had a few. Most notably in Oudtshoorn, in Ceres, in Grabouw. The most recent one is this month in Khayelitsha. So, Chair, if I could just get the period of burglaries for what period, but I also can then just get, because he also wants the cost, the Honourable Member wants the cost. And that information I do not have with me now, but we can put it as part of what we will give to you for the, let's say, burglaries the last financial year up to now. That information I can provide.
Thanks, Chair. On the issue of the timelines, we envisage that we will complete all the trucks by the end of the current financial year. That's what we are targeting. Obviously, because they are all fitted with the equipment that it all, I think it's just the connectivity. We've explored the issue of the mobile suitcase. We've brought one in the office. We wanted to do a proof of concept with that. Obviously, we need to follow a procurement process. Again, you know, it's a very interesting thing because these things are there. You can go on the shelf and buy them. But unfortunately, you cannot do that. We have to follow a process to be able to do that. We've seen them. They've got nice scanners, small cameras. A person can enroll a person, you know, without even using a huge truck to be able to do that. But we are looking at various, you know, options. There's another option I'll show you maybe after the meeting. I've got it on my phone here. It's a self-enrollment where a client will just do the enrollment of a smart card or passport on their own without being assisted. So it's a form of a kiosk. So we'll be able to demonstrate. I'll send you the pictures, but after this meeting, I've got it on my phone. The issue of facilities, we've already spoken to Public Works again. We're saying Home Affairs will be here with us for the next 100 years. The issue of leasing buildings is not working for us because these buildings are not purpose-built. They are people queue outside. You know, if you go to Peter Maritzburg, for an example, if the office where we're located is in front of other shops. So it creates a nuisance factor, you know, even to the people that work next to us and so forth. So we want a campus-style a Home Affairs office. You know, if you look at the office in Randburg, for example, it doesn't cause a nuisance factor because they've got a huge parking space. Inside the office, it's a campus layout. People once the office is open, it's not an ISO, but you go to the office in Pretoria at Byron Place, it's an ISO, because people are queuing right around next to the Department of Higher Education and Training and other shelters. So the issue of purpose-built facility is what we are pursuing now as the only solution. As I've said in the last quarterly review when we came to present in the first quarter report, that we spent last year 300 million rand on leases. 300 million rand, you got nothing to show for it. And that excludes the amount that we use to do the fittings in the offices so that it can actually be ready for use. So where we are, we do not want, we believe that that 300 million can go a long way in building permanent infrastructure and ensure that the offices are there and going back all the time and giving money to landlords who just enrich themselves and not giving us a building that we need, a substandard in some of the cases. And people look at us and say, how do you operate in such a facility? Unfortunately, Chair and members, we've opted for public finance management law that is actually not helping us, because the public works say to you, no, this lease is ended, I must go again to the market to look for premises for you. And that is actually a wastage of public money. We need to really to review this thing, because it is not curbing wastage, is not curbing fraud and corruption, but worse, it has turned the state into a tenant state where we are becoming tenants instead of owning facilities as government. Thank you.
Minister?
Just in 2 minutes, the proposal from Honorable Janji and Honorable Omake, on the issue of legislation, last week we had a top management meeting. I already gave that request. Let's look at the slew of legislation and see where there's a weakness and where there's an amendment, then we'll come back to you. The second set of questions, I think even you can help. There have been quite a number of proposals that maybe we need a colloquium with judges. Some of them don't know the implications of their judgments. They are looking at one individual and say, let me be nice to this person. They are not aware that they are destroying the whole population. So maybe then the other one being, could we be having judges who are trained specifically for migration cases? Those are some of the things we are looking at, because then they are specialized, they read about migration, you know. When I was invited, the person who was organizing this was the deputy president of the Northern Gauteng High Court, Honorable Obrile Dwaba. Yes, during my discussion with him, I discovered that there are a lot of gaps about some of these issues, because you are saying, come and give us information about this issue of migration. And now that's where the conference, where the international jurists lived in and said, no, but you guys, the judgments you are making are going to destroy the whole world. Pull back a little bit and change your approach. Yes, so the committee can also call us and put us in a meeting and let's look for solutions for this. Otherwise, we look like the worst country on the continent, when we are not. Honorable member, I'm sorry, I know Honorable Kota is in a hurry. I was in Zambia, in the SADC organ on politics, defense and security. They were giving us a list of countries in SADC about visas. Remember, all countries come to South Africa visa-free. The SADC countries, sorry. All SADC, except DRC. And then we check the other countries. We number one. It's only one country we don't allow visa-free. All the other countries in SADC, there are about 5, 6, 4 who they are not allowing visa-free. We number one, but we are the ones who have been condemned all over. You see?
No, thanks, Minister. Honorable Kota is not in a hurry, because he has not submitted an apology today to us. So you'll be with us until we is an item you must interface with. We want to take this opportunity to thank your team, Minister, the DG, and Mr. Simon, your team, for the submission brief detail that you've presented to the committee to assist after the oversight we've engaged on for members to engage with the issues. We really appreciate where their weaknesses will collectively assist the department, and where there's good work, we must appreciate the good work that has been done. Secondly, we agree that we are referring back the reports of two provinces. We'll inform you as to when we're going to reconvene. We hope that in the next session we'll be able to be accurate and detailed on the report that we've been given. We also want to the minister you to submit the report of Desmond Tutu. Went on oversight. There's a report that we've been waiting for since the 28th of August. And I think the next meeting will request you to submit that report. They'll brief you, your team, and also Mr. Simon, the report that has been requested for the meeting. We thank you for being here. We're going to release the department, and we'll be left with members for 5 minutes to conclude the items that were here. Yeah, you can just make a stroll out. Thank you very much, Minister.